will call the meeting of the state government finance. Call the meeting of state government finance together to take the omnibus bill. Noisy conversations outside, please. And it's gotta be pretty noisy for me to object. Jeremy understands why that's a funny joke. But anyway, let's start. Oh, we have the minutes before us from March 9th, 2010, and Representative Taft moves the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, now we have a couple of technical and easy amendments to start, which I'll start. First, I'll move House File 349, which is the governor's, bill as introduced. So, move that. Then we have, in case the governor got too excited and thought that's what we're going to do, we have a delete everything amendment, the 810 amendment, most of which we, a lot of which we discussed at any rate, so, and that will be what we'll be working from. So I'll move the 821.
Chair, I was just wondering if we could maybe go through this again. I know we did the side, I know we did the governor's bill yesterday, but we didn't really go through the side by side with the delete everything.
Will. Can I get the bill into the shape? The delete everything amendment, which will put the bill in the shape. If that's okay. Without any objections, I'd like to move the delete everything amendment. So we just amend the bill and that's not passing. So all those in favor of the delete everything amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. We now have some two technical amendments. 820 and 822. Let me say what they are. Okay. I am informed. The amendments in our package are in numerical order.
Wow.
So we can pull out the A20. The A20 is a technical amendment from the LCC. I'll move the A20 amendment. Oh, the A22 amendment. Okay. A20 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, just one request that we move through. If you could just allow us to find, even on technical amendments, allow us just to find what we're replacing in the bill so we're all really all on the same page. Representative Wakeford doesn't like that, but we'll.
New standard.
Madam Chair, that was the A20 amendment.
That was the A20. Okay, do people have the A22 in their package?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just me. Okay, the A22. This is from admin, and again, it's another technical amendment. Anyone want to look at it longer? Page 11, line 25. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Okay. Now, the first step, as Representative Hutton suggested, is to go over the spreadsheet. We'll turn to Ms. Roberts for that.
Madam Chair, members, unless there's an objection, since we did just review the governor's recommendations at our last meeting, I can focus just on the changes that are different from the governor's bill. If you look at the spreadsheet, there's a thinner column in the middle that's slightly shaded, and that shows the differences from the governor's recommendations, and it might go quicker if I just focus on those.
People happy with that? And of course, we'll stop to talk about any. Okay.
Beginning with the legislature, you'll see that the recommendation here is for a smaller reduction to the legislature in the operating budget than compared to the governor's recommendation. The total reduction for all three House Senate LCC would be just over $2 million for the 10-11 biennium. Carrying down, there is actually a larger reduction from the carry-forward accounts with the legislature compared to the governor's. An additional money taken out of the House carry-forward and the Legislative Coordinating Commission carry-forward accounts, but no money taken out of the Senate. And that was to match up with the Senate's own budget bill on their line. So that's the first major difference. The next difference is down at the bottom of the spreadsheet under administrative hearings. You'll see that we did...
So just to clarify, every place where it says zero means there's no difference with the governor's numbers that we went over last, whenever we did.
On line 43, you'll see that the bill does not include the funding for the transfer of the implied consent jurisdiction. That issue is still being discussed in policy committees and may be dealt with at a later time. So you can see then on the second page that there are no differences for the remaining agencies. The final difference is on line 76, where the governor had recommended a $9 million across the board operating reduction. This bill includes a $2.63 million operating budget reduction. And the language, as we'll see, is slightly different. It has some additional specifications of areas that can come from. So the total expenditure changes within the bill are $5.358 million. That's above the governor's recommendation of $7.6 million. And again, the major differences are in that across-the-board cut and then also in the legislature. On the bottom of the page, looking at the revenue changes, the only difference on the second page is an additional $53,000 transferred out of the governor's office special revenue account. That's the account where agencies pay in to cover the costs of some of the government relations staff. And on the final page, again, you'll see there's only that one small revenue difference. Otherwise, the bill includes all of the governor's recommended revenue changes, including the tax compliance initiative. And those are all of...
I want to emphasize at this point, although I think we said it yet, is that we've stopped. In the past, we've usually gone beyond the governor's tax compliance initiative. This time, we stopped precisely with the governor's tax compliance initiative. He figured out what we were going to do anyway and decided he'd do it instead of us.
And just the conclusion of the spreadsheet, if you see at the bottom on line 138, you'll see the total net change of both expenditure reductions and new revenues compared to the February forecast, and that is a reduction of $32.77 million. That's it.
Okay. I think the most useful thing to do now is to have Mr. Shepherd go over the delete everything amendment, maybe emphasize.
I had one more question on the spreadsheet.
Okay.
Just to be clear, and I'm sorry if I missed this, the basic difference between the governor's target, governor's number and our number is the, and I'm sure you must have said this 10 times, and I just want to make sure I have it, that we're still expecting, when we're making the 2.6 on line 76, the operating budget reduction, we're naming the 2.6 million. And rather than allocating the $9 million sort of across the board soft number, we're asking each agency and each budget to find their $9 million of operational savings? Or can you explain that again?
What happened there was that the governor suggested a $9 million cut due to various deficiencies. and he had a run-on sentence of what efficiencies they should look at. We reduced that 9 to 2.63, so we're looking for less efficient, for less, and we were more detailed in the kinds of efficiencies we're not doing, although we didn't assign a number to each one. Then, to make this work as a cut, you then have to do, we do this, pick up the same language, and Steph, if I'm saying something wrong, jump on me. But we have to, we picked up the same language that the governor picked up, which saying if you don't make these, then you have to, then finance has to go back and cut the budgets to make it. So it's roughly the same language with little tweaks that the governor had. But that language on the cuts, you know, needs to be in there, otherwise it's not a real cut. Is that good enough?
So for those of us who were, Madam Chair, who were skeptical about the ability to monetize that, to actually realize that $9 million savings, what we're doing is actually naming, and I'm sure Mr. Shepherd will show us this, the $2.6 million quite specifically, and I think we have a couple of technical amendments there.
I think we'll see when we get to that point.
Okay.
As we go through, but the 2.63, we don't divide it up into pieces. We just, as I believe, but we go into greater detail than the governor did in his. Our run-on sentence okay. is more complete than his run-on sentence. Better thought out.
Okay, thank you.
So, and it's less. We're looking for less. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering the reasons that you did not take the recommendations on the legislature and the state agencies where you wanted to cut them less. I was just curious for the rationale.
One of the problems with is that the legislature is really in charge of its own budget, and so the legislature should determine what the cut is for its own budget. And it may be no surprise to the members of the committee to let you know that I'm not totally empowered to make that decision alone. So I went for advice to legislative leadership as to what that cut would be, and that's what we had. For the Senate, we did the same thing. The Senate's already passed their bill with their passed with their numbers, and we just took their numbers strictly, which we've done continually in the past, although if you listen to tapes of the Senate hearings, they will continually accuse the House of balancing the legislative budget on the backs of the Senate. But Representative Pepin.
Well, I just have to make a comment on that. I think it makes us look a little cynical as a legislature by us not taking the same hit as the other offices. It's just my opinion, I think, and when we're in the budget deficit we're in, I think when we're kind of scooping ourselves out from the rest of the mix and we're not willing to take the cut from our own budget, as much of a cut as we are from the other constitutional officers, etc. I understand where everybody's taking a cut. I'm just saying, you know, we're not willing to take as much.
What's the difference?
Madam Chair and Representative Pepin, for the constitutional offices, the biennial cut is a 3% cut. The state auditor, I should note, it's only applied to the non-reimbursable portion of that office's budget. For the legislature, there's a 1.5% reduction to the total operating budget. There's a 9.2% reduction to the carry-forward accounts, and that totals out to about a 2% reduction for the biennium.
Representative Downing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to piggyback on those comments that jumped out at me when I saw the spreadsheet, and I regret that I haven't taken the time to maybe formulate an amendment to this, but I think last year our budget, we also had a disproportionately smaller cut than the other agencies. I know I heard from my constituents about the fact that the legislature was only taking whatever was a one point something or other cut when all the other agencies were taking a bigger cut. So I don't know if there's a way to formulate an amendment on the fly here, if you would at least offer the courtesy to me to somehow work with Mr. Shepherd on the fly to actually do that. I'd like to propose that we actually take the governor's recommendation and show we're willing to do the same.
an amendment is in order to, we don't want to go back and forth again on things, but clearly to any of the numbers in this until the bill goes out. And I'm sure Mr. Shepherd or Ms. Roberts might be can do that amendment for you, but can someone tell us what we did last year? My memory is not what yours is, but.
Madam Chair, members, I only have the numbers for the agencies that were within this division. The
I would just compare the legislature to the governor's, probably the best.
In the 2009 session, the legislature, both the legislature and the governor had a 3% cut to their operating budget.
I was going to say that, but.
Is it possible to work an amendment, Madam Chair? Do we have time today? Is today the final markup on the bill?
We're going to get the bill out. But if you notice, we've also reserved for we have a room reserved from 4:30 to 6 if we don't finish.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
4 to 6 or something. But, okay, Representative Kipp.
No, it's okay. I'll let them.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. It seemed to me that if we were going to do what Representative Downey talked about, it's simply taking the numbers from the governor's recommendations and substituting them like in 2.4.
No, I don't think it's that.
It isn't that. Okay.
It isn't that simple because I think you don't want to overcut from the governor, and so we cut the carry forward more than the governor did.
Yeah.
So okay. I think you want to have it. I promise you, we will not pass the bill out before you get a chance to make that amendment. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Any other questions on the spreadsheet? Any other questions on the spreadsheet? Okay. Mark, can you go through the...
Madam Chair, members, in Article 1, I'll just focus on almost all the riders here are from the governor's bill, and they just implement what Ms. Roberts just went over on the spreadsheet. So I'll just focus on a couple of items that are a little bit different. On page 2, lines 2.5 through 2.9, this is the language that I think you discussed yesterday that says that the revenues received by the House from voluntary donations to support broadcast or print media are appropriated to the House.
And we did, I don't know if everyone got it, we did get some information. There is a kind of an appeal in session weekly. Every once in a while we have gotten about $10,000 or something. Oh, it's in the packet, I'm told.
Madam Chair, I'd also point out on page 2, lines 18 through 21, we put this language in the wrong place. This exact language should go under the House of Representatives, not the LCC. So if it's all right, we'll just change that in the next version. And then all of the rest of the riders, I think, are from the governor's bill or implement the spreadsheet items that Ms. Roberts just discussed, all the way over to page 7, line section 19. And this is the section that Representative Kalin and the other members were just discussing. It requires that in fiscal year 11 that the MMB would allocate a reduction of $2.63 million to the operating budgets of executive branch state agencies. It then says, to the extent possible, this would be achieved through estimated savings for space, out-of-state travel, energy usage, professional technical contracts, increased telecommuting, and consolidation of information technology functions. And then, as Representative Kahn indicated, it does say that if they cannot achieve the full amount of this reduction through these savings, then the $2.63 million, the rest of that increment would have to be allocated to executive agency operating budgets by the Commissioner of MMB. Article 2 is the statutory language, and I'll just try to focus on the parts that are different from what was in the original bill, as best as I can recollect. The first section 1, the expenses of the governor-elect, is from the original governor's bill that you saw yesterday dealing with the transition expenses. Section 2 is different. It was not in the governor's bill. This is the Help America vote account. It establishes a process under which when the Secretary of State determines the states eligible for additional HAVA payments, the Secretary would certify this amount and specify the portion that would be taken from an unencumbered general fund appropriation that's not designated for another purpose, and it concludes by appropriating money in the HAVA account to the secretary on an ongoing basis. The next.
Madam Chair. If I could just ask a question in regards to this section. I know it's kind of hard sometimes to go all the way through and then try and go back.
No, I prefer to have questions as we on go. The sections as we go.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Is this, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Shepherd, is this more of a cash flow issue, or are these actual sums appropriate? I'm not quite sure here.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I think there are staff from the Secretary of State's yes. office here that may be able to explain hopefully in more detail than I could.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, my name is Jim Geldman. I'm Deputy Secretary of State. The language that I believe you're looking at is giving us authority to transfer general fund money into the HAVA account to meet the match requirement of the HAVA account. We received a new appropriation of federal HAVA dollars that require a match, and we need the legislative authority to spend general fund money to make that match. It doesn't appropriate any additional money. It just allows us to use our existing general fund appropriation to make the match.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so when you do that, what's the net? So the net is a double of that amount, is the net amount to the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I believe the state match is only about 5%. 5%, so it's a very small amount of the general fund money.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Gilden.
Madam Chair, the next section is the language that I believe the committee considered yesterday relating to two-sided printing for in state operations. Section 4 deals with parking spaces on Aurora Avenue in front of the Capitol and provides that revenue that would be derived from public parking would be deposited in the general fund.
This is actually different than previously. We used to not capture the revenue. Now we're capturing the revenue. And the other thing that's interesting is that we think if they reconfigured those meters to be equivalent to the revenue in, let's say, downtown Minneapolis, we'd be looking at the revenue increase in terms of the set. And I think capitals is important, just parking in downtown Minneapolis. And we were looking, back of the envelope figures gave us something like $150,000 to $250,000 that we could get from those meters, and let the senators walk a little further. Okay. We decide. Just in case, as we presented some of these ideas, we didn't book any of the funding from some of these ideas that we've had.
Madam Chair, I'm sure that in negotiation with the Senate, that we could structure it the same way as we have structured the operational savings. That if they don't realize that if they choose to park there, they have to take it out of their own budget.
Good idea.
Madam Chair, the next section on technology lease purchase is language from the governor's recommendations and the governor's bill. Section 6 is from the governor's bill relating to the recycling center. Section 7 is new. It was not in the governor's original bill, and this is a section that you just amended at the request of the Department of Administration. And it provides that upon request from the head of a state agency with control of a state-owned building with a market value of less than $50,000, the Commissioner of Administration can sell, demolish, or otherwise dispose of the building if the Commissioner determines it's no longer used or is a fire or safety hazard.
The only question I have on this, and I don't know if we get it from the Department of Administration, is I want to know if there's any possibility that the Ford building will be determined to be a building of under $50,000 value. Is there anyone?
North of Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration. Madam Chair, the Ford Building is in statute that it cannot be removed, and it was your language that put that to be that way, so...
Well, I just wanted to make sure that this doesn't override that.
Madam Chair, no, it doesn't, but I have somebody from our surplus that would just love to come down and testify, because she's never testified before. She has pictures. We're talking about lean-tos, outhouses, those kinds of things, and the Ford Building sure is not in that category.
I'm just worried about definitions being put in place.
Mr. Okay. Shepherd would have to say that.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, the next section is on the state recycling center, Section 8. That's from the governor's bill. Section 9 is from Representative Kahn's bill that you discussed yesterday relating to the state webmaster. Section 10 is from that same bill relating to the state webmaster, and as is Section 11 on page 14.
Not that I want to point out how totally generous we are, but we will point out that that demolishing of old buildings was a Representative Pepin bill. So.
And okay. Madam Chair,
to your bill, that's sections 9, 10, 11.
Yep.
You mentioned yesterday that there would be savings out of this, or 2 days ago. Have you booked any savings out of this?
Well, unfortunately, this is one of the things where you need to, you know, eventually there'll be savings, but you need to put the funding up front to see the savings. So I think we do have a fiscal note. You know, we'll probably also send the bill separately.
Okay.
We do have a fiscal note. You know, we do have a fiscal note on the bill, but I think in terms of what we're doing in turn with the accountability language, you know, in that 2.63, I think that can, you know, this is one of the things that can fall into that accountability. This would kind of be in other words, you'd have to cut more to be able to do this in terms of, because this is a cost in this year as opposed to a savings in this year.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me point out, members, the fiscal note is in the packet.
Madam Chair, Section 12 is from the governor's bill relating to representation for the state on the Workers' Comp Reinsurance Association. Section 13 is also from the governor's bill relating to recycling, as is Section 14 with technology lease purchase for Department of Revenue Integrated Tax System. Section 15 is from the...
I don't know if we want to talk about this now, but I've had some complaint from the another member of the House about the putting out the recycle, about getting rid of recycling. And the 2 points that were raised by this member is that the value of the when the prices are high, particularly for white paper, because I guess state government is just a massive producer of white paper, but when the white paper is that the there's a big profit to be made for it, and then if the prices go down, that profit disappears. And so the problem is, if we've put this out to a private company, will they they'll have the ability to do it while the profits are high and then back off when the profits decline? And the other issue is, shouldn't one of the things we do, in some cases the profit is an argument, the profits could be high enough so we should do more than offset the costs of the recycling, we should also take a percentage of profits at a certain level. And I don't know if anyone wants to speak to this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Fielding. I'm the Director of Plant Management, and the Resource Recovery Center is under my responsibility. Madam Chair, the revenue associated with recycled paper swings widely, as you mentioned, but at no time, even in its peak, which was roughly 18 months ago, at no time has the revenue from that paper done more than offset roughly a third of our total cost. So there is still a net expense associated with the Resource Recovery Center, but obviously the revenue is a big part of keeping that cost down as low as we can. If we were out in a third-party bid, obviously they have the opportunity to realize revenue from the sale of whatever they would receive, and I'm sure that would be reflected accordingly in their net cost in whatever bid they provide.
Would the bid be structured in such a way so that it would be, as these prices are cycling wildly, would it be possible for someone to be in on the upside and out on the downside? Would that be any possibility in a...
I'm not sure that I'm prepared, Madam Chair, to discuss what the bid options might be, but certainly through help from MMD, I'm sure we could attempt to structure something that is obviously in our best interest. But I'm not sure, just on the moment to think about your question, I'm not sure that there's an opportunity. I mean, any third party is going to bid on the basis of having favorable periods and risky periods. And if all we want to do is take advantage of the market when it's high and let them take the risk when it's low, it probably won't result in a very favorable bid.
Representative Biggum? Oh, did you? No.
Not on this topic.
Okay. Representative
General.
Mason, did you have it?
Madam Chair, Mr. Fielding, I have a question. It's the state of Minnesota is a pretty big operation, and so how is it really possible for another party to be able to make more money than the state on the recycling?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not sure that they would. Although obviously a third party who is solely in the business of collecting recyclable material would have a larger volume and may be able to negotiate more favorable revenue on a per ton basis just because of their size. We recycled over 3 million pounds last year, but I think if you go out to some of the larger waste haulers and consider their counts, that's probably a relatively small amount in the context of the total metro area or certainly the state.
Thank you. Okay, does this still work if there are no bids? Do we still keep doing resource recovery?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Okay. We're hopeful that we'll be successful in that bid.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Representative Biggum, did you want...
If you continue going through the bill, I just noticed that Article 3 about the implied consent provisions in the Office of Administrative Hearings is no longer in the delete-all. And I was just wondering as to the reason.
We said that.
I'm sorry, I may have been running in between hearings.
I know. The bill is still going through policy committee, and I had decided, which I think was agreed, that since I didn't feel competent to deal with the subject matter of that it should probably be carried in Paymar's bill, because he's much more familiar anyway, but it was totally taken out because of the just because the bill, it hasn't been decided yet. Still in policy.
Madam Chair, are you sure that Representative Paymar, we passed his bill out today. I don't recall an explicit conversation about it in the write-up of or markup of the bill, and it just passed out of Representative Hillstrom's committee to Pawlowski's committee, actually. So I just don't want it to get lost because, you know, it's part of the whole global thing.
Okay. It's obviously, you know, there's no objection. I mean, assuming that the bill's passed, that I think it will be carried somewhere. There's obviously going to be plenty of places to carry it. We didn't think it was appropriate to carry it. We thought it was more appropriate to carry it in that building and this. And if someone feels differently, then it'll possibly come back into this.
Okay. Maybe sometime between this hearing and Representative Hillstrom's hearing, which is going on now, I can stop by and talk to Paymar to see what he's thinking with it and then report back.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Section 15 on the bottom of page 16 relating to tax preparers is from the governor's bill. Section 16 is not from the governor's bill. This is a provision you discussed yesterday relating to trust administrators for the public entities OPEB trust accounts, and it provides that the reports on portfolio and performance information would be submitted to the state auditor in 2013 instead of 2009, which is the current law.
We had some questions about this and the wording of this language. Is this someone from the auditor's office who can talk to us about this?
Madam Chair, members, Rose Hennessy Allen, Office of the State Auditor. We're seeking an extension of the effective date for the reporting to our office. This reporting will result in infrastructure and staff costs, so we would need an appropriation, which is why we're seeking to extend the effective date. There will be transparency, and there is transparency already, because these public entities must report the information in their audited financial statements, which would be public. So there will be transparency even before the 2013 reporting.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, Section 17 on the bottom of page 17 is from your bill on the public access to state data. It's a report. Section 18 is the issue that you discussed yesterday about the request for proposals for tax analytics and business intelligence tools in the Department of Revenue, and that's the last section.
Okay. I think, Representative Pepin, was that your bill, the tax analytics and business? Okay. One of the questions is, I guess to someone from the question is, one of the questions we had is when the other parts of the integrated tax system were going to be in, and does this, and we had some thought about does the effective date we've put in that work with when we're going to have enough information on it. Did you speak with anyone in revenue, or should we have them talk to us now?
Madam Chair, I know that their preference was to move it back. I believe the date they wanted was in 2012. I guess my preference would be maybe to be to split the difference, because that seems like an awful long way away, and I think certainly that gives them more than enough time to.
Well, let's hear from revenue about. Is someone here from revenue who can talk?
Well, never mind. We'll just go with the current language then.
What? It's coming. It's coming. They may move slowly, but they get here.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Greg Cheeto with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. The question is, we had suggested December of 2012, because that is our end date for the integrated tax project. So that is the date that we've gotten. I don't even know what splitting the difference, what date would we be at. To be honest, I think we could move it up possibly to have the RFP out by July of 2012 without any huge damage, if that's better.
All right. Is that what? Okay, I think, can we have some language that makes it clear that the, okay, so we'd want to have the number at 18.32.
Yes.
Later date, we'd want a later date for that, but the effect of this, the section could be effective, so you could do an RFP in July, that would be okay? July 1st, 2011, okay. Enter into the contract.
When we spoke with, I believe it was House Research yesterday afternoon, our deputy commissioner, our CFO, and I talked to her. The two recommendations we originally had asked for were changed in that line, 1832, from July 1st, 2011 to December 2012, and then we had also requested that we change shall in that sentence to may. Well, our rationale for this is, what if the responses are just bad?
Mr. Chita, I'm sorry that Madam Chair, Mr. Chita, we're actually laughing at the chair's joke, not at I wanted to make sure you didn't feel this.
Right.
You were suggesting that shall we change the month.
And I want to reiterate that the Department of Revenue, this is something that we fully intend to pursue. I mean, we are very interested in getting back into doing it in all the advanced analytics and predictive modeling and things. We think that there's a lot of value. And so it's just we want to do it in a good, planful way, and we don't want it to put our integrated tax system at risk, nor do we want to rush into this and do it where it isn't in the best interest of the state.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Mr. Chita, I just have a question for you. Are you a political appointee?
Not at all.
You're
I've been there 23 years.
You're going to be there. I guess, Madam Chair, I guess my feeling is that's quite a ways out in the future, so I would like to, you know, maybe this is too, maybe we can move the dates here back 6 months, and that would be more of a, we've got July 1st, 2011 and January 1st, 2011, maybe they would be moved out 6 months or something, both of those dates.
Well, December of 2011 would be right in the time frame that we are actually doing our fourth rollout. So that could be a very difficult time frame, just for the fact that we are very, very busy at that point in time. As I said, July of 2012?
Madam Chair, I will point out to Mr. Cheetah that, and maybe to the committee, that but you don't have to be like the rest of us. We're in high school or college. You don't have to actually wait till the actual date.
No, and
like we could do December. And
if we could do it earlier, we would do it earlier.
Yeah.
As I said, it is something that we do want to, I mean, that we do want to get into this.
Well, the sending out the RFP July 1st, 2011, is that okay?
Well, that's what she's,
that's
what's in the bill right now.
No, it's January 1st, 2011.
No, it's July 1st, 2011.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's the contract. I'm looking at the effective, the effectiveness, the section effective date, which is where you send out the the first thing you have to do is issue an RFP. So if you make that effective, so you wouldn't, this says that you don't do it until January 1st, 2011. The first suggestion is to make that July 1st, 2011. That the RFP would go out July 1st, 2011.
And again, our preference would have been 2012.
But you thought that getting out the RFP.
And then you could have the RFP out by July 1st, 2012. So if you wanted to move it up, I mean, we'll do whatever we can.
Well, your preference would be that all the 11s would be changed to 12s.
Correct.
We're trying to get something.
That is 6 months earlier than what we had originally asked for. We will do the best that we can, no matter what.
I know you will, but we want to do something that acts as that makes sense. Mm-hmm. We'll try and do something. So let me try. My suggestion was to have the RFP go out July 1st, 2011. And then put the, I was going to say December 1st, 2012, in that date there with the shall. If we did a May and we did July 1st, 2012, I don't know. You know, I think based on the responses to the request for proposal, I think that mitigates the shall. So if you say
there were no good responses, you know, then the shall is inoperative, don't you think? Do you think that's based on the responses?
Well, it says shall enter into a contract.
But it says based on the response. The situation where all of the responses were bad and you didn't want to take any of them, you think you still have to enter into a contract?
Well, that's where we talked to a few people in our legal areas, and that's what they said.
What if it said based on acceptable responses?
I wouldn't know. I mean, that's
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather not have to use the word may, because that's very...
Well, this bill has a long way to go, so we don't. So I think we'll leave. So what about...
How about should?
No, should is the worst. We're tempted to put in must.
Yeah.
Best on... So I would suggest... Would you want to do it? Okay. I would suggest that... on line 1835, the January becomes July, so that gives you your 6 months there for having to do it. And I would suggest that we put the...
July to December? The other July to December, 2011?
I was going to give them a 2012 date on that.
A year and a half.
I know. But, you know, we're back here and we can fix... going well if they're RFP. I would rather have, and let's do it. I would like to put acceptable modified responses by putting acceptable responses, and I think that gives them enough of a fudge factor. And the and you would rather have that be July 1st, 2012? Is that meaningful, do you think?
July 1st, 2012, yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I think I have the amendment. July 2012. So the amendment would be to put in acceptable on line 18.31 between on and responses. And we put in, and I think the committee record will show certainly that we certainly believe they can if there are no acceptable responses, that voids the shall enter into a contract. And then on line 1832, the 2011 becomes 2012. And then on the 1835, the January becomes July. Is that okay? You think you can? We know you don't have to say you love it, but you think you can do it. Okay. You want to move it?
Yeah, oh. I will move that amendment that you so graciously.
Representative Pepin moves that as an amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Representative Kipline.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am just I had some other questions about the bill as it currently is. I don't know. Is this the time
yes,
to?
Yes, this is the perfect
time. Okay. All right. Good. I wanted to go back again. I actually have a question for Ms. Roberts, and this has to do with page 9, subdivision 2 in the middle of the page having to do with appropriations. And can you tell me, Ms. Roberts, how much money is in the Help America Vote Act account right now? Mm-hmm. I was going to try and give you a little heads up, but it was moving quicker than I expected. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair and Representative Meyer, I didn't look at that before I came to committee. I don't know if there's someone from the Secretary of State's office that can answer that.
No. Ms. Gelman? Someone from the Secretary of State's office will say they can't answer it.
Madam Chair, Representative Meyer, Jim Geldman with the Secretary of State's office. I believe Beth Fraser has just gone up to find the exact number. I don't believe either of us know it offhand.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I can still proceed. We can kind of get those numbers, but I did a little calculations with the last question that I had and the 5% match, which was $61,000, And that comes out to a total, ends up that in the Help America Vote Act account, then that there would be, with that match, a total of $1.220 million. And so that's a pretty substantial amount. But what concerns me is that on line 915 in the appropriation language is stricken, where the legislature would have direct appropriations enacted from time to time by law. And I know that last year we did some appropriations from that account, so I'm not quite sure either how much is left, but that this total sum now in the Help America Vote Act account would then go to the Secretary of State. And there's quite broad discretion in how to use that money, including administrative requirements under the Act and plan. So I just have a concern of that large amount of money and these changes going on here that I guess I'm careful to make sure that the legislature might preserve that language. And I actually, you know, think that we ought to just leave the original language as it is. But well, if there's more information that we could have, that would be helpful.
Well, we're going to get the amount, but I'd like to have, maybe Mr. Gelbin, can you, what happens when we, happens if we don't have it appropriated, but we, do we meet often enough so we can do direct appropriations enacted?
Madam Chair, Representative Kipmeyer, up until June 30th of last year, we had the authority to transfer the money from the general fund to the Help America Vote Act money to make the matches. We've been receiving annual appropriations of Help America Vote Act money since, I believe, 2004, if I'm not mistaken. And every one of those has required a match from the general fund. Again, there are very strict restrictions on how the Help America Vote Act can be spent. We have to submit a plan to the federal government every year saying how we are planning to spend that money. We work with local units of government to develop that plan and submit that, and we get approval from the federal government on how that money can be spent. About a year ago, we just completed our first audit by the federal government, where the federal government came in and audited it and made sure that we were spending the money in accordance with the plan. The initial amount of Help America Vote Act money in 2004-2005 was substantially more than the appropriations that we're getting now. I believe the most recent appropriation, the one that we're seeking the authority to match with state funds, was, I believe, $1.7 million. And again, what we use that money for is to upgrade our computer system. We've just passed some legislation on the House floor today that's going to require upgrades to the computer system and the like to implement those changes. We use it for our software licenses that we have to purchase and the like. We can't use it for any other purpose other than elections. And the other restriction that's placed on our office that I think important to remember is that as long as Minnesota has Help America Vote Act money unspent, we are required to we are required to maintain the effort that we had in 1999. We have to continue to spend what we spent in 1999 on elections. And that includes any money that the local units of government, which we have already made grants to purchase voting equipment with out of the Help America Vote Act and the like, as long as they have money that's unspent, we have to continue to make that match in our elections budget.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to be misunderstood here. Certainly, the Help America Vote Act account is very specific, and certainly, we intend that those monies appropriated there either by the general fund or by the federal dollars that come here be used for those specific things. The only thing is that the change here is that it generally went through the legislature and was subject to direct appropriations. There are amounts of money that were set aside to be used for those purposes, and we certainly don't want to hinder you in any way, shape, or form, but this is a carte blanche. I mean, it's taking all the money from the Help America Vote Act account and moving it into the Secretary of State, and that is without a direct appropriation. And so my issue is not the a match or anything else like that, but it's the doing away with the direct appropriations enacted from time to time by law. It is that language that's being stricken.
I think the question that you're being asked, Mr. Gelman, is do we really need, is there something that didn't work by the direct appropriations enacted from time to time by law? And then if there is some reason why that didn't work, the thing I'd certainly like to end put on this is some kind of reporting, timely reporting process. But that's
Madam
the
Chair,
first question.
Madam Chair, Representative Kipmeier, yes, there was something that didn't work, as unfortunately we were getting some of these appropriations from the federal government at a time when the legislature was not in session, and we would have to wait until the legislature came back into session. We would welcome a reporting requirement in your language to let you know how we spend the money, but sometimes it's not efficient to have to wait until the legislature is back in session in order to spend the money.
Ms. Giffen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I know that Ms. Frazier is here, and I'm sure can give that more light. But I think the whole intention, though, is that these direct appropriations are over a two-year period in a general way, that they come through budgeting process and anticipating some of those needs. And I do know, in regards to that legislation, if there is some sort of direct appropriation, I would think you may have an amount. I mean, I think we can accommodate that for you, making sure that you have that appropriation. I don't think, I mean, we're right in the middle of session right now. This is exactly what it's for. We can do this, and this is the budget to do it in.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Beth Fraser. I'm with the Office of the Secretary of State. Representative Kiffmeyer, the legislature put language into the into rider language in 2007, appropriating all of the HAVA funds to our office. So we have not been doing the appropriations from time to time for several years now. So all of the HAVA funds have been appropriated to our office. This would apply to future funds, if any. In terms of transferring money to make the match, this gives us the authority, which we had in rider language and which has expired, to make the match when it's needed. So, for example, there is some federal funding sitting out there. We have not been able to access it because we're waiting for the legislature to take action, which means that the state is missing out on interest funds that we could be earning. And we never know when Congress may or may not appropriate additional funds. So it just gives us the flexibility to access federal funds as soon as they become available.
Well, a possible compromise is to just appropriate all of the funds for fiscal year 11 for fiscal year 11 rather than forever, which this does. So then that would be something that we would then look at again.
Madam Chair.
And it's done by what? Mr. Shepard.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, just Ms. Roberts and I were just discussing this, and Ms. Frazier mentioned that in 2007 the legislature appropriated the money from this account just for the biennium, and we realized that in 2009 that was done also. At least for the current biennium, there's a rider that you enacted last year that said that funds available in the HAVA account are appropriated for the purposes and uses authorized by federal law, presumably just for the biennium ending June 30th, 2011.
So we could actually take this, nothing will happen until, so we could take this section out, and we'll just discuss this again.
Madam Chair and members, I don't believe we have the authority needed to make the transfer to make the state match.
Madam Chair, I think you do need subdivision one. That is a very important part. That, right, subdivision one is in regards to that.
No, I was just...
And I absolutely do support that. I mean, I know you
okay,
need
I was
that.
Talking about, can we just take out subdivision two, and that will work for this biennium?
Madam Chair, I believe so, but Ms. Frazier is checking. I'm getting the...
Madam Chair, and yes, that it looks like that would work.
Okay. Okay. No, Representative Kiffmeyer moves. You, Do you want to move that we delete subdivision 2?
Yes, Madam Chair. We could delete subdivision 2, lines 9.15 to 9.23.
Okay. I hear the motion by Representative Kiffmeyer. Any objections? And that will work for you till we get to meet, do appropriations again.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, members of the committee, that will work fine for us. We do need that subdivision 1, though.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. All those in favor of the Kiffmeyer motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. What? Are there any other questions to the bill itself?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question on the webmaster that was in here. And I know that there was a fiscal note to it, and I can't find it in my stack now for some reason. Oh, here it is. And I was just wondering if that was that to be absorbed by the Office of Enterprise Technology. And then I was just wondering, I know we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but I didn't see the note yesterday. And I was, OET is in favor of this, or where did this originate from them, or where did it come from? I guess, is there anybody from OET that could talk about that?
No. I'll have OET speak to it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Michael Meilenberg, representing the Office of Enterprise Technology. Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, it is not our legislation. Our position on the legislation is that we support the goals of it and could do work around it to make it happen, but we would require resources in order to fulfill the requirements of language.
I'm just wondering what kind of, what, you know, obviously they're taking a cut, the OET is taking a cut, and I'm just wondering what additional percentage this would make this if you added on that additional cost. Perhaps somebody who's better at math than I could figure that out. I'm just wondering if you add that cost onto their current cut, what the total cut would be, because I'm going to look at it as a cut since they say they don't have the
Looking at it at is part of the that efficiency, that 2.63 cut. I'm looking at it as part
right.
of
right, but he's saying that in their opinion, that would be this would be on top of that because they don't have the. I was just curious as to what it would look like from their perspective because that's an awful lot of money.
That, about that's required before the 2.63 cut comes into effect. This would be part of that. Okay. So it is an official. Yes, it is an official cut. And this came out. This came out of language from various meetings of House and Senate members and staff members and so forth, working on the whole concept that we've talked about of duplication and transparency and so forth. And this looked like, this has been done in, which is the state that?
Madam Chair, members, a couple of states have followed the lead of the federal government on this issue. Utah comes to mind as a particular leader in this area.
And I think, and there also ought to be, in terms of some of the things that it might be a possibility to use some federal stimulus funds for doing this. I think that's been done in some states for. So, Representative Dennis.
Mm-hmm. We finished it with that? It's not to that point.
Okay. Any other discussion about that? Thank you. Representative
Downey. Madam Chair, a second question just to the bill in general. Section 16 on page 17, line 17.29, we're offering a four-year extension, it looks like, on the reporting of these, what I think are OPEB trust managers. And I'm curious if there's anybody who could explain the need for that. I know.
We did.
I missed it. I'm sorry.
Do you want to? Do it again.
I'll pass, then. That's fine.
Okay. The question is, they're not going to be ready to deal with it electronically.
It's just the electronic
component.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Now we have various amendments. Okay. Various amendments now. The first one I'd like to deal with comes from Representative Kath.
The amendments are in your packet, and amendments are in your packet in numerical order. Of course, I've already messed mine up, but we're looking at A13.
Madam Chair and members, yeah, thank you. The A13th amendment should be in your packets. And really what this amendment is trying to bring back the respect that we have to our troops and our veterans in looking at how it is that we are spending to support our troops' funds. It has been brought to my attention through an email as well as some research of my own that right now there is a transfer from the Department of Veterans Affairs, the Support Our Troops account, that goes to the governor's office. And that $30,000 that has gone to the governor's office is supposedly used in accordance with statute, but I am very much questioning that. And this was brought up also in the Senate, and is pretty disturbing to me that we are using these dollars for support our troops. If you take a look at the statute that talks about support our troops, it talks about that it must be used for two different purposes: grants to veteran service organizations, as well as an outreach to underserved veterans. The concern that I have here is I don't believe that this $30,000 that is being given to the governor's office to be able to use for political appointees is actually meeting these standards and would be better served by making sure that it's part of that grassroots effort that many of our service organizations are trying to achieve, and that is specifically getting those dollars to our troops to support them. And so what this is saying then is that we should take those $30,000 and we should appropriate that back to the Support Our Troops account so that it can be better utilized. Did a little research for myself, is taking a look at who this appointee is, what's going on, and it really was an appointee that was in the Office of Government and Faith-Based initiatives. And the problem that I had is that in an email that I've received from others and discussions that I've had is that most people have no recollection of this individual doing anything for our troops or for veteran services. And so the question I have there is, you know, is this $30,000 actually being utilized for our troops and for our veterans, or is it just a pass-through that is then just being used in the governor's office? And I have deep reservations about utilizing this money in that way, and want to make sure that it gets back to our support the troops account.
And just to make the amendment complete, it's page 2 after line 32. Insert.
Page 2 after line 42.
32.
Oh, 32, excuse me.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Gannon.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Representative Kath. You said you have questions about how it's being used. Do you know for a fact that this money doesn't somehow make it in a direct or indirect way to supporting troops in some fashion?
What I do know is that it is used for a special advisor on faith and community service initiatives, and the individuals that I have spoken with in looking at how this money is currently being utilized is not in the area of the Veterans Affairs, and many people are starting to question, was this person actually doing due diligence to our troops as well as to Veterans Affairs? Question also is the fact that my understanding is that the individual, the appointee, is no longer in service to the governor's office, and I would like to have that answered as well. And specifically then, if this position is not filled, if this person is no longer working there, I think stands to state that this money should be returned immediately.
One of the things I think that Representative Kath is trying to point out is we should be very sensitive about the people who are, in a sense, donating this money by buying a special license plate. It's a little bit different than the stuff we appropriate, you know, which is like more like Monopoly money than people's real money.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know that we have the information to dispute or confirm this. It sounds like it's some anecdotal information, and I don't know if there's anybody here to testify one way or another on this. I don't have any information one way or another, and so I guess we run the equal risk if we pass this amendment of taking $30,000 away from an individual who may be providing counseling. I'm not sure. I am just hearing the description of this individual now. So in my mind, with the information we have before us, this could cut both ways. We could be taking money away from supporting our troops as compared to somehow better allocating it. So anyway, absent some testifiers or some information that would provide clarification on the question, I think we'd have to vote no.
Well, let me ask if there's anyone here from the governor's office to speak to this.
Madam Chair, I would just like to say, though, that, you know, if this is a good idea, in other words, if this position is something that Support Our Troops says is a necessity or something that they believe is good use of funds, it should be part of the Support Our Troops account, and they then can use that money to be expended in that way. But my understanding is that the individual is not currently employed, and that many people are questioning whether or not this individual actually is providing $30,000 worth of services to our troops. Specifically saying, too, I mean, yeah, these are individuals who are paying $30 for their license plates to say that they want this money to be going towards grants to veteran service organizations as well as an outreach to underserved veterans. And I strongly question this and say that the Support Our Troops account, I think, would be the best place for them to be able to expend these dollars and not the governor's office. And so I think this money needs to go back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kath, I know you're an honorable guy and we have a good, friendly relationship. We have no evidence. I'm not looking at your emails. I get tons of emails about all kinds of things, and I think we're making a pretty strong move here without any evidence that this money is somehow not being used for our troops. And again, I'd say on that kind of evidence, I'd say it's 50-50 whether we're, at best, whether we're actually putting money towards or taking money away from supporting the troops fund.
We're certainly not taking money away because we're putting the money into the Support Our Troops account. And as I recall, that special account that we set up was purely for the governmental services representatives in the governor's office. And so that's an essentially the lot. This is a compromise. Remember what I originally wanted to do was I wanted to increase. This is a way of making the governor's budget look smaller because all these people are really working directly from the governor, from all these other departments, and the compromise was to set up a special account. That this special account is really in the budget of the governor's office. Anyway, Representative Kalin.
Madam Chair, I had heard some inklings of the fact that the compromise that we had worked out on a broader level wasn't fully being followed, and like my friend Representative Downey, I'm, you know, be skeptical until you actually see the proof. And the Minnesota Public Radio story, I will actually just read it because it may be helpful here from this morning. After a discussion of a similar amendment, I don't know if it's exact same language as Representative Katz, but Michael Pugliese, and I apologize to Deputy Commissioner if I'm not saying his last name right. I always get it wrong. I'm sorry, Commissioner. Deputy Commissioner of the State Department of Veterans Affairs is defending the agreement as an appropriate use of the Support Our Troops Fund. Pugliese says the staff member is no longer working for his department, but he said the agreement paid dividends, paid big dividends, excuse me. Quote, I saw this as a great opportunity to bring somebody on board part-time, Pugliese said. Again, quote, we only paid a partial, I think, 25% of her salary to use her for 25% of the time. There's more, I don't know if it's relevant information, I won't read the whole story, but so that answered my question about whether this agreement was actually being worked out. And I think Representative Katz's point about if it was a good use of funds that it should have happened within the account, just to be more straightforward and upfront about it. And I actually know the Deputy Commissioner pretty well. I trust him. I think he's a good guy and doing a good job, and the department's doing a good job, but this should stay within the account.
And Madam Chair, that is truly at the heart of this. Is it saying that this is a specialized account that's set up through the sale of these license plates, and if the Support Our Troops account is, you know, wanting to expend these dollars because they actually believe that there is a benefit to the veterans under what statute says, then so be it. But to have it as a pass-through to go to the governor's office and then to have these other layers there to decide whether or not it is actually meeting statutory requirements, to me starts to get further and further away and stray from the intended purpose of these dollars. And that's the concern that I have, and I would say that the money does need to go back to the Support Our Troops account, and by doing so, we'll guarantee that it fits with what the statute was intended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kath and Kalin. I certainly am sympathetic to some of the, you know, things that you brought up. I think we all want to make sure that these are spent in that way. I think when you read the language, though, what the money is to be used for, one of them was outreach. And that's a little bit vague sometimes.
Absolutely.
Outreach. And sometimes through the governor's office, having the power of the governor's office and the other supports that go with it, sometimes that outreach can be very effective that way versus a standalone fund and some other things. I think they can go different ways. But I think my bigger concern is, you know, that we're kind of taking a very, I mean, I think there can be a discussion about these kinds of things without the other kinds of negativism and other comments being made. I think we can say we want to move these funds, but I don't know that it's necessary to say that they weren't being used properly.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, that was never my intent to say that this individual who was hired was not doing a good job in the context of whatever she was hired to do. And specifically, my understanding, it was a special advisor on faith and community service initiatives. What I'm trying to do, though, is defend what this account was intended for and how those funds should be utilized. And I believe that it should come from the Support Our Troops individuals who are looking at the intended use by what statutory requirements are, and not saying that it should be a pass-through that goes then to the governor's office to have that next layer then of saying, is this money being properly utilized? I mean, again, these individuals are paying these dollars to have these license plates to make sure that those dollars are being expended properly.
Representative Sandy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And part of my question is to the chair of the Veterans Committee as well. I know that we just expanded the definition of the Support Our Troops Fund to extend to, I believe it was their families as well, because we broadened the program and the structure, and I don't remember any conversation coming up around this topic during that time. And I guess my overall question is, does this person actually still work there? I don't know if any talkings with Colonel Allness or anyone else, does this person still exist? I don't know if the chair is the only in this position or not. And I don't know if the chair knows or if Representative Kath knows. But to me, the first thing is anyone still operating in this position? And secondly, I don't know, just being on Veterans Committee, I had never heard any mention of this in the expansion of this.
Okay. The reason you didn't hear any is that this is actually an account in our division. The governor's office, political relations and legislative relations and so forth is part of our division. My advice to members would be that I think I agree with what I've heard about this. I think it ought to be, I think that the people who are buying these license plates have a very strong sense of where they're supposed to go. I don't think they think it's supposed to go for support in the governor's office. I think I would suggest that we pass Representative Kath's amendment, and believe me, if we've done the wrong thing, there's plenty of opportunity to hear about it as this bill moves on its way. Mm-hmm. Representative
Taylor? Madam Chair, I don't know if Representative Cronin wanted to say anything. I do have something to say, but the question has been addressed to him. So.
This fund, I think, is pretty important for its intended purpose. And I have to admit, I didn't know that some of this money was actually being used at the governor's office. This is the first I'd heard about it. I would think that, though, if we'd keep the money within the funds, then we know for sure that it's being used where it's supposed to, for its intended purpose. I'm not going to question a bit that what the money that did go to the governor's office, to understand it was part-time, I'm not questioning a bit that part-time use wasn't used for veterans. I'm just not going to question it. But I do think that if we just make sure the money stays within the fund, that then we know everything's for its intended purpose.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I recall last year hearing a lot of hue and cry over the legacy amendment, and where where those dedicated funds were going to go. I think the least that we can do to our veterans and those supporting our veterans is make sure that the money is in that account, so we can have a real transparent and easier accounting of those expenditures as Representative Coonan and Representative Kath have raised, so I would request a roll call vote on the Kath amendment.
Okay, roll call vote being requested, but we have more people to speak, so we won't go to it yet. Representative.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The only thing I want to add is a little bit of history. I think I found a news story from May of 2009 about this particular issue, not the use of the driver's license, veterans plates for this funding, but because we did have a person, the same person who was the Special Advisor in Faith and Community Service Initiatives. That position was eliminated in the governor's budget last year, and as we've seen in many, many cases, they found a different way to take a little bit from each agency to backfill that cut. And so in the context of discussions about you know, whose budgets are being cut where, I think this fits into that, which is that we have we've seen it over and over again where there's cuts that appear on one level, but if you actually dig a little further, it's not a real cut. And it's, I think it's concerning, and I think it's certainly a good idea that Representative Kath has brought forward.
Representative Kipner.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Albeit we all agree, these dollars need to be tracked, and they need to be used for what people paid for. No disagreement whatsoever. So my one question here, though, is more procedural. We may need staff to answer. This is a go-forward budget. Was there, I'm just not sure, the $30,000 taken from the governor's budget going back to support our troops? I mean, this is for the next 2 years. What you're talking about is these 2 years, right? And this is for the next 2 years. So it's just a matter of maybe a little bit technical or procedural. I mean, is there an appropriation somewhere right now from support our troops that's going to the governor that we need to return?
Well, this is the 20. This is for obviously the 2010-2011. This is what's left.
Yeah.
Of
the biennium.
Of the biennium, mm-hmm. And the point. And if you remember, we set up that account where money was taken from, and we didn't specify how much, but went from departments to the governor's office. This is money that we just said that instead of instead of just having this go, these people serving in the governor's office, that the appropriation to support them would go into a special account, and then that would be connected with the governor's office. So, you know, it's interesting that the governor cut this account. In his own budget, this account was cut significantly. He cut it a little bit more. But the idea is, while we're cutting this account, we really want to send the Support Our Troops back to the Support Our Troops Fund, because there is a big cut in this account for the next year. So this kind of fits along. This is kind of protecting at least this chunk of money from that cut that the governor suggested and we suggested and we augmented.
Madam Chair and members, yes. And if you look at it on the Senate side, they're actually going and they're saying that all of this money that was a part of that, they want to remove from the budget. And what I'm saying is that just removing this and saying that this, you know, is then a cost savings, that concerns me. This money should go back to the Support Our Troops account. And within this biennium, that should happen.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, this is just technical. This is not value. This is just strictly, is it, so it's there now? I mean, right now it's there?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to be sure we weren't doing a double.
No.
And or if we needed to do more or whatever. Okay, I think I got my question answered somewhat.
Okay. 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 Take the roll on the Kath Amendment.
Kahn?
Yes.
Bigham?
Yes.
Downey?
Aye.
Holberg? Kalin?
Aye.
Kath?
Aye.
Kipmeyer?
Aye.
Coonan?
Aye.
Mason?
Yes.
Pepin?
Aye.
Poppy?
Aye.
Sanders?
Yes.
Simon?
Aye.
Winkler?
Aye.
Got through our first roll call. 13-0 for the amendment passes. Okay. We now have to get out of this room, and we have to move to 400 South, and we So we're going to recess until 4:45, because you do need people to move on.
Dick, there are two amendments that I have that will take. First, we'll take the ones, it's listed MS-146, and my packet is kind of near the top. Said everything. This came to us, you know, and again, it's part of our issues on controlling health care. This came to us from Representative Reinert, who the city of Duluth does this. So it doesn't, we made it effective so that it gets into the next bargaining unit. I'd like to move this. This says that CGIP has to offer discounted admissions, membership in gyms, health, or fitness clubs, or similar facilities to employees who intend and use these facilities. And this is many, many private companies are doing this, and many public companies are doing it too, for some reason. So we haven't. So.
Do we know what the cost impact would be, or do we have somebody that could testify about CGIP? Or what this would do to CGIP?
First of all, we're not. Yes, okay. first of all, no, we're not doing it till the next. So that they get to.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Yoakum with Minnesota Management and Budget. This has come up in previous sessions, I believe. Traditionally, this has been a collectively bargained benefit, as all the benefits have. This has come up in the last several bargaining cycles, and I think has been specifically turned down among the bargaining groups. I guess part of the argument has been that it already doesn't. It incents the individuals that are already going to the gyms, but research has shown that it's not really getting new individuals to go to the gyms. We require all the health plans and who we have contracts with to report on give us annual reports on return of investment, and none of them have shown a cost savings for the entities that have done this. It's my understanding from CGIP that in previous years this has been estimated with the reimbursement rates back to members about $1 million is what the cost. We haven't done a fiscal note on this, but it's my understanding that that's what's been done in previous sessions.
Well, of course, it doesn't come out of this budget. It gets before them. So, you know, I would, again, as I said, it came through from Representative. But it is true that many businesses, this is a very common thing to be done by many businesses, many units of government, and so forth. And that people coming to the state from somewhere else are kind of surprised to see that it's not a benefit.
Madam Chair, as I said, it has definitely come up in the collective bargaining, and I know our folks at CKIP have definitely heard from state employees on the issue.
Okay, well, I'm going to move it. Any further discussion from the committee? Danny?
Madam Chair, is that in the spreadsheet or no?
It doesn't. It's effective.
No fiscal money.
Okay. It's effective for the next. It's effective for the next year. Okay, and in fact, we'd have, if we hear ferociously from it, we've got time to get rid of it in the next session. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. The next one I'd like to move is MS-149, and that's the MAPT. I don't think they reimburse us for miles run unless we do it through a health club. We don't get it. What?
$20 breakfast for us if we run?
Yeah, I know. We should figure out how to fix it for people who run on their own without being in health clubs. Okay. The next one is MS-149. And this is the MAPT data on expenditures. And this is, and I've actually talked to the committees like Representative Hausman and the Capital Investment Bill, and the Capital Investment Bill, and I've also talked to Representative Wiginius for the LCCMR and the other bills, and this is very similar to what was done with the ARRA money, and it's a super map, which you can for the ARRA money. And we've had discussions with MNGO, and they say, you know, when I saw it for the ARRA, I immediately said I want to do it for the whole budget. And everybody blanched and said, you know, nothing's in good enough shape to do it. But the answer is we could do it for these things that are kind of specific issues. And we have them figure out how to do it with everyone involved. So I'd like to move this amendment.
Just a quick question. With this language, specifically looking at the clicking on a map on line 1.6, I mean, that, and the data is data, so I just hope that we can work with folks and make sure that what you could do is actually maybe do an interactive version of the bill itself, and that you could, or just a spreadsheet, and you could actually click, so you need not do a map. And I don't want to get too down and dirty, but I just want to make sure that we're leaving flexibility so it really is useful and transparent. This could actually be a really phenomenal tool if it has multiple ways of working with it.
I think with the language that starts on 1.6 and then goes through with who's going to work it out, I think there's plenty of flexibility to do it. And I think just looking at anyone who hasn't looked at that MIN recovery map and tried to use that with the information you can get from that, you know, for the public, it's just incredible. Oh, and in the MIN recovery map, we were, I don't know if we were the fourth in the country or of the top four in the country, but it's clearly recognized as being very good. And Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if there's anybody from MMB or administration that wants to comment on it, or they're good with it, or...
Madam Chair and members, my name is Abigail Reed. I'm from the Budget Division at Minnesota Management and Budget. And just wanted to express that we appreciate recognition that this kind of work does take time and resources. And we would appreciate the opportunity to continue working with the committee as this moves forward to resolve any possible technical problems with the language. As written, it does require us to take money out of the bond proceeds fund for this purpose, and we need to work with bond counsel to determine if these are the kinds of costs that bond proceeds can be spent on. And if that is the case, then we'd probably need some sort of then ability to sell bonds in the amount that would be needed. And so there's just a number of issues like that. I'm not as familiar with the other funds that are named. We'd have to make sure that we could work within the restrictions that are on those funds.
Again, the section's effective July 1st, 2011. So it is. So that there's time to figure it out. And I think, you know, a certain amount of the bond proceeds are used for... all kinds of clerical stuff that the bond proceeds will use for, including letting the bonds. So,
and Madam Chair, members, okay, that's why we just want to make sure we work with our Treasury Division and bond counsel as necessary to make sure that it is working as this intends.
Right. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next one. Eight. Zero-based budgeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. I'm sorry. I didn't... we actually talked about this a little bit yesterday in the committee meeting, but the zero-based budgeting concept, I thought this legislation was written quite well. And I think probably the easiest thing is understanding that over a period of time when an office is functioning, it's easy for things to creep in that are not essential or no longer in the law, but they just keep being done. And what this requires is that on line 1.21 is that everyone would provide the following information of activities that comprise the agency, a justification by reference to statute or other legal authority. And fundamentally, when money is appropriated to any of these department, institution, or agencies, that it is appropriated for the purposes that are stated in statute or through legal authority. So I think it also ties in the expenditures on that, and that this also in subdivision 3 on those three areas, they are included as well. So I think that this is a very sound kind of piece of legislation, and probably interesting enough, prior to this legislation, never seeing anything like this. This is what I did in the Secretary of State office in my last 2 years, and it was very effective at going back to statutes and laws and mapping them to the activities that we were doing and what they were costing. And it also gave us confidence afterwards that when we had some new features or new services that our customers wanted, we knew the dollars that we had to be able to proceed for that. So I think this is a very sound amendment. I think would help to also foster efficiency in future expenditures. And also that we in the legislature, when we appropriate money for a purpose, that we are assured that those purposes are having priority in the use of those funds.
First of all, I kind of commend you for doing it in the Secretary of State's office. I think that's probably a reasonably good it's a good idea to voluntarily have people take that kind of attitude. I kind of oppose this for the whole budget. I really oppose it for the whole budget instead of, and one of the major reasons is I don't think it makes any sense to spend 3 minutes deciding whether we're going to feed prisoners in prison or whether we're going to have prison guards or whether we're going to have Veterans Affairs, people in Veterans Affairs or, have a National Guard and that kind of thing. I just think that there are some that when you look at the concept, when you look at it for individual programs, it makes sense for people to do it for some programs and to do it occasionally. I don't think it makes sense to do it every year, but to put it over the whole, I have a lot of problems with this blunt tool over the whole budget.
So, Madam Chair?
I just oppose it.
I okay. do. I know, Madam Chair. I know that even in submitting it, I knew. I don't think there was any question as to where you stood on that. And I right.
Well, I just wanted to make it clear. I gave two reasons why.
And you could probably expound on this for a while longer. So, Madam Chair, limiting this to some fashion, maybe working at this and saying we could limit it this, maybe like a pilot or something, or kind of limit the scope might be something you might be open to?
Well, this language doesn't do that.
That's right, Madam Chair.
This is very, which you're on finance or ways and means?
I'm on finance, yes.
Okay. I guess it is a financial issue if you had, you have to talk at that point. It's what, I can't say yes before I see the language, but if it was something that limited it to certain departments or even voluntarily limited to voluntary departments, it would certainly be willing to do it. But, like, public retirement system, does it really make any sense to decide whether we're going to pay pensions or not? But Representative Winslow.
Madam Chair, has Representative Kiffmeyer moved the amendment?
I will so move it. Thank you, Representative Winkler.
Pick up on Representative Pepin's question, I wonder if there's anybody here from MMB who might want to comment on the utility of zero-based budgeting for the whole budget.
that's
a sufficient answer to my question.
Okay. Any other discussion, Representative Pepin?
Madam Chair, members, I would just encourage everyone to think about this. And the reason is because I think with the budget situation as it is now, and is $6 billion in the next biennium, I think this would really be a attempt to reach out to the public and say we are really trying to bipartisanly make an attempt to fix the structural problems we had. And frankly, when I go out and I have town hall meetings and I meet with people and I talk about zero-based budgeting, they are very surprised that we don't do this anyway, because most people do zero-based budgeting in their businesses and their own households. And I just think this is something that we could bipartisanly look at and, hopefully we can agree on and try to move in the direction of really trying to prioritize our budget. So I just encourage members to think about supporting it. I think it's a good start.
Representative Sonnen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kiffmeyer, I also commend you for bringing forward the amendment, because I think in concept and in theory, the idea of a bottom-up review and a fresh eyes every time justifying every line item is a good one.
one of my key concerns isn't the concept. I think you're to be commended for bringing it forward. It's the idea that I think it would basically it would be very tough for us to still be a citizen legislature and do this. I think just the time it would take would require, it would just require so much extra staff time, both in the executive branch and here, that I think going every other line over every line item and every line would make it really tough for us to get out of here by the constitutional deadline. We'd have to be more like full-time legislators, which I don't want to do. But I do commend you for bringing it forward, because, and Representative Pepin is right, I think people expect that year in and year out we're questioning whether or not we need certain line items, and we're looking for the most effective, efficient way of spending taxpayer money. This is one way to do that. I don't know how practical it is with a citizen legislature, but I think the underlying idea is a very good one.
Madam Chair, thank you. I think Representative Simon spoke most of to most of my concerns. I very much appreciate, I mean, I Representative Kiffmeyer, I am wholly on board the concept, and actually had the pleasure of being sort of number two or three in a process just now with the small $54 million, I think it's a $54 million general fund portion of the Office of Energy Security and the other accounts in the energy piece, and we had great collaboration with that portion of Commerce, actually all of Commerce, but that's the smallest, I think, specific account that we have, or one of the smallest of any committee, and it was very laborious and took dozens of hours, probably hundreds of hours of total man and person time to make that work. The process has actually helped me believe in doing it, but I think that if we could figure out a way to phase it in or to provide some support, I think we may see Representative Downey's amendment to take the governor's recs on cutting the legislature, and it may make it tougher for our professional staff as we're, you know, getting leaner and leaner here to actually do this effectively. And the other thing we need is, of course, good cooperation from the agencies. And I like that you have them required in here, but, you know, so it's worked in my experience where we've had that cooperation already. I just support the chair's, I may actually vote opposite the chair depending on how we go here, but I do support her suggestion to find a way for us to do it in areas that where we could get the fruit and the bang for the buck in the first pass.
Madam Chair, members, when I first was running, I was saying I really appreciated the zero-based budget as well, and I think there are ways that we might be able to work it. When I was in city council, what we would do is, like, every year maybe take one department and go through everything. And here, because we've got so many different departments, agencies, we really have to pick out a way to schedule it to have the appropriate oversight. And that would be my suggestion, is maybe to just kind of winnow it down and then year by year just try doing something like that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to argue really strongly for including this amendment. And, you know, I think, frankly, we're fairly negligent in not having some process similar to this. And I appreciate the Chair's comments about the efficacy for something where very clearly there's a huge public value and there's no way we're not going to do it. And maybe I might even offer an oral amendment here to the author of the amendment to see if we can't bridge this gap a little bit. And I also appreciate that going down to the detailed expenditure item for every activity, maybe more than is required to make the kind of the cost justification or the value versus cost comparison. But boy, if we don't do this, and it's a lot of work on the front end to get it in place, but once it's in place, there's very little effort, and frankly, I think the value on the back end of getting it in place is huge, and we don't, as legislators, need to participate in that process. That's a departmental activity, and maybe we do try and phase it in, or maybe we grant some leeway to start, but I can't imagine us as a state not moving to something like this as we face an increasing pressure from the citizens to be able to substantiate the value for what we're doing and root out the things that are unnecessary and obsolete and not adding any value anymore at a really high cost. And frankly, I think it's to the agency's advantage in the long run. I think hopefully we'd end up leaving out a lot of stuff they don't need to be doing, that they're doing right now for a lot of effort and dollars with very little utility. So maybe in a desperate attempt to get some kind of an extra vote or two here, on line 2.3, if I would offer a hopefully friendly oral amendment to delete itemized account and replace it with the word total. I'm sorry, instead of an itemized account, a total. I'd offer that as an oral amendment to the amendment.
I would accept that, Madam Chair.
Okay. Anyone else want to say something about this?
Just procedural question, just a clarifying question. Are you deleting, is the phrase remaining a total account of expenditures or a...
Yes.
Okay. I figured so.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. It also needs, that same change needs to be made on line 2.7.
Okay. Right. I assume that's accepted too.
One more question, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I wonder if someone from MMB Finance, whatever we call you, actually DMB, I heard the other day, right? The OLA calls them DMB. Has there been a, I mean, because we talked about this, I think, both publicly as well as I think in this committee at the beginning of our last year cycle for the 10-11 fiscal year about doing zero-based budgeting. And I'm wondering if, and it became very difficult to do, I mean, fiscal notes and other things were very slow and forthcoming, and I'm wondering if there was a specific barrier that needs to be addressed that has prevented the administration from doing that for this budget cycle or the past budget cycles, because I believe they can be doing this to start from.
Anyone from Finance?
Madam Chair, members, again, my name is Abigail Reed from MMB. I'll do my best based on my experience in Budget Division. I do know there are statutory definitions of things like an agency's base budget that are not referenced here. And so when we've talked about this, and we do talk about this within Budget Division, we've talked about a lot of the things that we've heard in this discussion, how going from where we are now to a total zero-based budgeting immediately could be very difficult and may throw into question a lot of the basics of our process and may make it hard to know kind of where we start. And so we've talked about a lot of things like, could you do a section of the budget at a time? Could you start with the pilot and move from there? I mean, we've talked through a lot of those things but haven't brought anything forward, obviously. So to answer your question directly, I think we'd have to take a look at statute and see what is in there that forms the framework of our process and talk through what would then need to change in order to do something like this. But it would be complex, both from that perspective and also just thinking about the materials that we do provide the legislature. They're based on some of those statutory requirements and also conversations that we have both formally and informally with the legislature before session, during the interim. Staff has been very helpful in that. And so a lot of where we are is built on those conversations. And so to the extent we could use those same conversations to do some of these things and to make some progress without actually putting something in statute, maybe more fruitful and easier to implement a first time out.
Madam Chair, to this point, I think that I am struggling because I agree with the concept wholeheartedly and probably as passionately as Representative Kiffmeyer and others on the other side have spoken about. My sense is that there are many, many that I asked the question because I had a feeling that it's much more difficult to make than a two-page amendment. And so I wonder if Representative Kiffmeyer might be interested in seeing if we can work out as a separate bill that can actually really thoroughly address these issues and that we can move this through in such a way that we can get this done. I think there's a lot of ideas around the table where we could really make this work and make it workable so it's not going to eat up and totally destroy our budgeting process out of our good intentions.
Well, I can clarify that, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think, first of all, on page 2, the effective date, this section is effective and must be implemented for the biennium 12-13. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that gives them some time in regards to what they need to do in preparation for that. So I just want to be sure that that was clarified to some extent. And the other thing is, during budget cuts, this is a time in order to prioritize your spending, a lot of it. This is a very good time to do it, because you're going to have to somewhat, with the budget cuts, go through somewhat of this kind of an exercise at any rate. So it's a very good time to make double use of what you are doing.
Madam Chair, members, I would, just to that point, we do actually issue instructions to agencies this coming June and July for building their base budgets for the upcoming biennium to help with the decision-making process, both on the side of the legislature and on the side of the governor. So this timeline would be actually quite tight, because we actually issue those instructions quite soon.
Yeah. Well, I could certainly do something more friendly to their process. I mean, the exercise of the process is tremendously valuable. The implementation is, that date. But I think that if we want to move it out for fiscal year 2013, and if that helps a little bit, I'm certainly open to consider. I think this is a long-term value, too.
Okay. I actually think we should vote. I think that people would be amenable to something that looks at a more detailed look at parts of the budget above a base budget. See, I just can't take the rhetoric of zero-based budget and then going off and say, well, you don't really mean zero-based, because you're really not going to think about not feeding prisoners and not having prison guards and things like that. I mean, it's, again, I came here from kind of a science mathematical background, that zero is a real number, one of the best, in fact. And so if you mean zero, it is zero. If you mean you're going to fiddle around it, then you should have some language that sort of fiddles around. So I guess I did tell Representative Pepin we were trying to get her to her daughter's band concert. So if we take all this time,
I can sing you a song,
we're going to have problems. So anyway, I'd like to, we have the Kiffmeyer Amendment as amended before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Division?
Division being requested. All those in favor raise their hands.
All those opposed?
Okay. Amendment fails 4-6. Downey, is the fleet management yours?
Yes, Madam Chair. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'll move the.
You shouldn't call on people. Well, all right, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I will move the H3449A9 amendment regarding fleet management. If I could, along with that, also offer an oral amendment to the bill that goes along with this amendment. And that oral amendment is to be found on page 7, yeah. Line 7.13.
Second.
I'm sorry, and this is the delete all to the bill.
Yes.
And maybe just 2 seconds of explanation. So the purpose of the amendment is to allow Department of Administration to advance on some fleet management and consolidation activities that are already in place. So what I'm doing here by virtue of the oral amendment is placing fleet management as one of the activities for them to pursue in their target, or in pursuing their target of $2.6 million in other savings. So on line 7.13, after the word travel, comma, fleet management. So we'd add fleet management as one of the activities that they could find their savings in. And then also on line 7.15, before the period, comma, or through other operational efficiencies.
Okay. I think we understand that. We're adding fleet management to that.
So in terms of the amendment, members, this is just some language that would allow the Department of Administration to continue to advance on certain fleet consolidation activities they already have, and rather than I trying to describe those, if there's somebody from the department that would want to come forward and kind of describe where you're at and how this language gets you further along, that would be great.
Okay.
H3, 4, 4.
Yes. That's why I had the problem. Jeremy.
Yes. Madam Chair, members, my name is Sheila Rieger. I'm the commissioner at the Department of Administration, and we are certainly agreeable to those changes. And I also have with me Tim Morse, who is our Fleet Management Director. We have had some discussions with Representative Downey, and we look forward to the opportunity to make these efficiencies. We think the amendment, as offered, will help us to do that. And I think we'll go ahead and have Tim offer some of the suggestions or some explanations about the things that we're already doing.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Tim Morris. I work for the Department of Administration. I'm the Director of the Fleet and Surplus Services Division. We have been working with state agencies to move toward a more unified approach to fleet management in the state. We have formed a fleet council which looks at all of the fleet and makes decisions on a statewide basis, directly in line with what the amendment is talking about. We are in the process of implementing an information system which will help us with the cost tracking, again in line with what the amendment is talking about. We've done some work with fuel cards, supplying fuel cards for state agencies in a more cost effective way. We've done some work with managed maintenance, trying to do the best job we can in managing the maintenance for the entire state fleet and keeping the costs under control. We're working on better and improved methods of acquiring vehicles and managing life cycles and vehicle utilization. Keeping vehicle utilization in line helps us keep the fleet size at the right level. All of these things are in line with what the amendment is talking about.
Okay, thanks. Does anyone have any problems with the amendment? Okay.
One question.
It's okay. We incorporated this other part into this, and we understood what it was.
Yes, thank you.
Fleet management. Okay. All those in favor of the Downey Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, we now recognize Representative Cameron has a... You guys might stay here, because I think he has a...
I think the commissioner can and maybe Mr. Fielding will come up. On the same section 19 on page 7, Mr. Shepard has the specific language, but in essence, the energy conservation savings should come from day cleaning. We've seen 4 to 8% gains in energy conservation, specifically actually conservation, not just efficiency, through cleaning during the day when the lights are on and the sun is shining. I think the bargaining units have been able to work things out in Hennepin County, and then the SEIU's janitorial contract. So I think we can expect some pretty good savings there. And so if Mr. Shepard could report the amendment, then I have one question for the commissioner and Mr. Fielding.
Madam Chair and members, I think the amendment that Representative Kalin had suggested would be on page 7, line 14, after the word buildings, insert including a move to daytime cleaning.
And Madam Chair, just the question, having talked to the Service Employees International and others who have done this transition, that you can't do it overnight. Unintended. We can't make this transition overnight, but we have to actually give a little bit of time for the workers to adjust their schedules, and we've been able to see it work with the bargaining units and others to make that transition workable. I understand it's anywhere from 2 to 4 months, and I just want to hear from Commissioner Mr. Fielding that commitment that you'll work with the employees and the bargaining units to make that work for them.
Madam Chair, my name is Dave Fielding, again, Director of Plant Management. Representative Kalin, we have an affirmative responsibility, obviously, to work with labor on this. And while I'm not familiar from personal experience for what that timeline needs to be, this will be a significant change, because it's not just going to be a change for the employees themselves, but it's going to be a change for those tenants in the buildings who are used to not having more than just a skeleton crew around during the daytime. So we believe in this change. We've started to assemble numbers both on the energy front and all the other savings that can accrue from this, and it clearly is worth doing. But it is going to take time, and we just feel that with this change, this amendment, that we will have, I think, a significant affirmation from this committee that we will need in order to have those conversations with organized labor to be able to take this forward.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other? Okay. All those in favor of the Kalin amendment as read, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Thanks. Now, how about the 810? That's the Kalin amendment, 810?
Actually, Madam Chair, if we could do the A15 amendment first.
A15.
You know, Madam Chair, the training grounds for federal office are often the...
Okay.
I'll move the A15 amendment. Excuse me. Thank you. The training grounds for federal office, I think I just made obvious that you have to remember to move amendments. Happens at the state level largely, and so we want to preserve the right for any member of the legislature or any constitutional officer to run for federal office, but I've been hearing very clearly from our from my constituents, as you probably had from yours, Republicans, Democrats. I have a lot of Jesse Ventura voter, independent-minded folks that they're just a little frustrated about the governor's two-step, and I applaud him for considering running for president. I think Minnesota would be well served by having a Minnesotan that well connected. I'm not sure that obviously that I would support this Minnesotan, but but I do think that we need the governor here engaged in the state, and if he's going to run for an office, that I think he should go ahead and declare it. I just have heard a lot from my constituents, surprisingly, and I would say it's across the political spectrum that you know, a Minnesotan thing to do is to just go ahead and do it. And I think that this actually does impact our budget, in that his engagement, he's a skillful negotiator. He has good ideas in some areas for saving us money, and I think the more he's here and engaged, the better we'll be. So ask for your support for the A15 amendment.
Okay, any discussion of
Madam
the
Chair,
A15? Representative Downey.
Representative Mason, I think,
Representative Mason.
First.
Madam Chair, maybe from, do we have legal counsel here? I would just question whether this would be constitutional, even if we passed it.
It's not our job to worry about that. anyway, Phil, but we'll listen to opinions anyway.
Madam Chair, Representative Mason, I honestly won't, I don't think my opinion would be very helpful off the top of my head. I really haven't thought about the issues here, so if you don't mind, I probably should think about it more.
Is that what you're telling me? Okay.
And Madam Chair, I think with the recent Supreme Court case and in litigation that's arising out of it, I think that there's some things in flux about soft money and at the federal level, and I think that there's a strong chance that this would pass constitutional muster, and if there's other changes we have to do to thread that needle, I'm happy to continue to work on them.
Okay. Representative Pepper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps Mr. Shepard or someone could advise on what if someone already has formed a federal PAC? What would that, would they be required to disseminate it, and then what would they do? Theoretically, what would one do with the money that was in the federal PAC that they'd already formed?
Madam Chair and members, I do think that's a good question, just as far as the way this is drafted. And the committee, if you want to adopt this, might want to consider addressing that in the effective date section by saying either that it applies to PACs that are formed on or after the effective date, or by saying that it applies to PACs in existence at that time. I did work on this with Representative Kalin, and I didn't clarify that when we drafted this.
I think this might need a little bit more work as far as clarifying what would happen before we take a vote on this. That's just my opinion. We can certainly vote on it, but I think we need more detail about what exactly, if it is constitutional, if what would happen with a PAC already formed, if there was such a PAC, and...
Madam Chair?
Representative Kelly, do you have a suggestion following what Mr. Shepherd just said?
Well, I think that it's an issue that is actually on the minds of a lot of Minnesotans. I appreciate the practical concerns, and I think it's the real crux that I've heard is the engagement here and wanting to be sure that we have all hands on deck to solve the budget crisis. So I'll actually withdraw the A15 amendment and ask that we move to the A10 amendment that goes to a perhaps a more pragmatic approach. I do have a change to incorporate once we are ready for me to move the A10 amendment.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll move the A10 amendment.
Withdraws the A15 amendment and moves the A10 amendment.
And Madam Chair, I'd like to incorporate a change on line 1.8 to change the $77 to the Senate figure of $96 per day. And Madam Chair and members, with that incorporation, what the amendment does is it reduces the base salary, not to zero, Madam Chair, but to 60% of the total salary, and then treats the constitutional officers in the same way that legislators are treated, and asks them to file per diem for every day that they work on state business. And choosing the $96, I thought was just a nod to the Senate, hoping that they'll accede to our position on this if they don't adopt a similar piece along the way. But then the total base or total salary could not exceed their salary today. And I think, as we all know, that actually getting per diem is a fairly straightforward thing that's not very cumbersome to do. And I think just, you know, wants to make sure that we encourage folks to be here and be working and then collect the pay for that time. There may be a decent savings that can result out of this, and then, you know, five constitutional officers, anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000, depending. But so, ask for your support.
Okay. Any discussion? Senator Kiefmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just did a few calculations, and especially when you bump it up to 96, and you do that, it's. I don't know how much savings there would be, but especially just knowing the amount of hours or seeing the Attorney General doing things around the state and the Secretary of State and all of these, that I think that it would be a question. Now, that it questionable that it may even have some savings. It may just end up being more paperwork. When you're talking about when they're on state business. So I just, on the other end, if you have the majority there, you can do this, but I would suspect, and the question I have is, has the state auditor weighed in on this at all, or any of the other constitutional officers, what this would mean to them?
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, no, but I wanted to make sure that it does treat all constitutional officers fairly. And just one point, I believe the governor's salary is currently $120,000 roughly. And so if you do 60% of that, that's $72,000. And then roughly $35,000 in per diem leaves you with $107,000 as what the governor would receive. So it does actually, we do experience a little bit of savings. It's not my intent to hack away at the governor's salary personally. That's not my intent with this. And I'm happy to work out any details if this committee adopts to make this amenable. But I have heard a great deal, as I'm sure other people have, that you know, these longer trips for for other reasons that we want to make sure that he's available and is working on state business, as all constitutional officers are.
Madam Chair, in regards to this, not all constitutional officers are paid the same. They all have a different rate. So in some of these, there would be some savings, and the others, it actually, it says here you can't go above it, but if you did a strict calculation, technically you could, because they aren't all. So in effect, though, it really is going to fall most heavily on the governor and attorney general, and I think state auditor, but especially the, I think the attorney general right now is about 95% of the governor's salary. So, you know, but on the other hand, you may or you may not.
Okay, any other?
Representative Pepper.
Representative Pepper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, and I, you know, my first inclination was this is a great amendment because we're saving money and that's a great idea. My, I guess my question has to do with the part that I see that you put in 112 and 113 about not limiting to a percentage of the salary of a constitutional officer. I'm just thinking that, and I'm not sure where, I'm not sure how I want to address this, but it'd be a little bit awkward because I would think there'd be employees in their office that would then make more than the constitutional officer that was elected themselves because of, because of their current salary or whatnot, and so I guess I'm kind of wondering.
My interpretation of that was that it would be the same, was that the number that would be used to determine that would be that the number that you can't exceed may not exceed the salary for the position in effect on June 30th, 2010. That's what I assume that maybe it's not. Written well enough, but that's what I assume.
Does not affect the salary. So the other public, it wouldn't cut those to 60%.
No.
Right. And I guess what I'm saying is, it seems like it would be a little bit awkward to have, the AG making $70,000 or whatever, and then his lawyers making, I don't know what they make, but more than that. I'm not necessarily opposed to that. I'm just wondering if this should be broader than just the, you know, maybe it should go down a few levels. See what I'm saying? If they'd been there, and I understand like a lot of them are political appointees or whatever, but I don't know about the, maybe Representative Simon can talk about that. I don't know how that works in the AG's office, but to me it just seems like it would be a little peculiar. So I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I'm just wondering how that would be handled, or maybe that we should go another level deeper to make it a little parity, because I think it would be a little odd to have the top officer making less than his or her employees.
Madam Chair, I guess my question for staff is whether that's happening now, and I don't know if I believe it is happening now, that just knowing the professional employees that we have, for instance in the AG's office and others, that I don't know. Sorry. I'm seeing different tentative signals both ways from the audience and staff and members.
Someone from the Attorney General's office can answer that for that office. You don't have to say whether you like this idea or not. Just the question being asked is, are there any people in the Attorney General's office who right now are making more than the Attorney General? That's the question we're asking right now.
Madam Chair, my name is Rebecca Spartz. I'm the Director of Administration for the Attorney General's office, and we do have four people presently who make $2,000 more a year than the Attorney General does.
Okay. All right. Answer that question. Thank you. Okay. I think it's pretty simple.
Well, Madam Chair, in this particular case, though, just some additional information, the Secretary of State makes about $90,000. And so if you take 60% of that and you add back the per diem, there would, in essence, probably not be a cut. So that's what I'm saying. These folks are not all done in this situation. I think to what Representative Pepin is saying, though, I think that's because there is current law that says they're pegged to the governor's salary, not so much to the attorney general's salary, and that's why you might have that.
Well, I think the reason it was asked about the attorney general's office is that that's a place where that effect is likely to occur.
Yes.
I know it also occurs in certain employees, particularly medical offices and so forth, where that's done. Okay. Any other discussion, Chair?
Okay.
Representative Pepper.
One other question. I'm wondering, since if we kind of basis on what we do at the legislature, and we're a part-time citizen legislature, and we can have other jobs. I'm wondering if this would change that and then make this, how that would work. Perhaps Mr. Shepherd could comment on that. Could they have additional jobs? Could they be, have two jobs? And how would that affect per diem? Would that be in the same alignment with what we do at the legislature? How might that work?
I think that we haven't changed their definition of these are full-time jobs. We've just divided it into two things. Representative Kalin, do you want to?
I don't think.
Okay. No more discussion. We have the amendment before us. You know, I think if we need technical changes to these things, we'll be able to do it. So, all those in favor of the A10 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Pose?
No.
Motion passes. Okay. The 11. Is this a Downing amendment?
Just to get the page and lines up.
The 11 is the one. A11, we're putting all these Downey amendments in, and we got the most of the group. Representative Downey, that was just the perspective question.
Chair, I did last year, so. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I move the A11 amendment, and this amendment is intended to establish an entirely kind of private commission composed of presumably business groups, county and city association groups, and labor in an attempt to find large-scale opportunities for innovation and reform and bring them back to the legislature. This is actually traveling in the Senate. It's a Senator Bonhoff bill with a little more detail on the structure here in the House as compared to trying to flesh through all the details in an amendment. We thought that it would make more sense to establish the concept of the commission, a broad outline of its roles and recommendations to bring back, and then assuming that these would all end up in conference, kind of resolve the differences and fine-tune the structure and the mechanisms, et cetera, there. So I move the amendment. I think this is a really good idea. I know the Minnesota Chamber, the Business Partnership, the associations and other groups that I mentioned are very interested in doing this. I think it's the right mix of people. I can imagine that some of those discussions would be challenging with all those parties in the room, but that's the only way to get real recommendations to the table that could actually pass here. So I'd be really hopeful. I think this could produce a really rich set of recommendations for us in the next legislative session.
I actually very much like this form better than having this detailed. I like this form much better than having the detailed list, and the detailed list being able to be provided afterwards. You know, I think.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering if you will feel the same after I point out that it's the governor that's appointing a commission to provide the legislature with a plan. And I appreciate that. I'm really interested and have actually had some conversations with retiring executives who are going to actually be free of the shackles their situation.
Maybe one of the things that would look a little bit better provide the legislature, but to produce a strategic plan. Do you accept that as an amendment?
Yes.
I mean, we really want it going to everybody,
not just the legislature.
Okay.
Then I'll stop my soliloquy.
You want to just incorporate that?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Downey.
They grab the language, then that'd be great.
Thank you. Representative Downey, there's no other area of government that can do this. You really need to expand the role of government to do because I think we should call for a roll call if we're expanding government.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, there are no governmental entities present. There's no legislative representation. This is... frankly, this is a group that could probably convene itself at the call of any member here if we were so inclined to put in the effort. I know some effort has been undertaken outside the legislature and outside the halls of government to bring this group together. This is really just bringing some endorsement to that effort and saying, yes, we would love to have an outside party meet and offer a critique of how we're structured and bring some large-scale innovation and reform recommendations to the legislature, or to the state.
We don't need a roll call, but I just think it's
okay. I think little the idea that the governor
expanding the role of government there from Bounty, but that's it.
I think that the there are lots of other ways in that Downey wants to expand the role of government into all kinds of private activities.
Keep offering the amendments.
Okay,
Madam Chair, just one, and I'm not going to quibble with the language right now, but this is one of the things that I'm not so sure we need the amendment to do. That again, I think the governor should have done this a long time ago. I think that I know actually candidates for governor on both, well, I guess there's multiple sides of the aisles, but both Republican and Democratic, and I imagine that Governor Elect Horner will also endeavor this given his background. But I like the directive, but at the same time wonder whether it's necessary. But I do know that, you know, when you're doing true innovation, you know, sometimes doing the problem solving, knowing the problem and the mechanics of it, I just think as this moves along, we'll probably want to incorporate legislators and other agency folks so that there's a real ability to call in people who can say, this doesn't, I mean, I think Ms. Reed's testimony on the zero-based budgeting is a good example. Here are the problems. Let's actually figure out how to fix those problems that way.
Okay. Any other? All those in favor of the A11 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion passed.
Yes.
You are
aware. I don't want to expand
that. This is that. Some of these we have and we don't know where they came from.
Oh, this is mine. I'm sorry.
Which one?
Yes.
What?
Oh. Okay.
And Madam Chair, if I could, since my reputation is being sullied here, could I offer an oral amendment to replace the chair's recommendations with the governor's recommendations for the legislature's operating budget reduction? It was recommended to me, members, to as compared to actually trying to offer the detail.
I think we have the wrong amendment.
A12?
Oh, no, I was asking the chair's indulgence to offer my oral amendment regarding the legislature's budget as compared to dealing with the A12 right now.
Oh, okay, with the spreadsheet.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry. Instead of the H1.
So yes, and so if
okay,
that's
you,
thank you, Madam Chair.
To propose an amendment.
Yes, an oral amendment that is
okay.
Not the H12. Thank
okay.
you, Madam Chair. So the amendment, and as was recommended to me by Ms. Roberts, the easiest way to offer this would simply to be to offer an oral amendment that would change the legislature's operating budget reduction section only. So the House, Senate, and Legislative Coordinating Commission lines from the chair's recommendations to the governor's recommendations for both FY 2010 and FY 2011.
Okay, any discussion of that?
And Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll call.
Okay. Roll call being requested on this. You're not going to allow the legislature to have made its decision that they'd rather work on the carry forward money than on the actual section? You don't think that had any
carry forward
any use?
Madam Chair, my amendment was just dealing with the operating budget reduction.
So that would mean, so if you did that to the operating budget, then the budget in this bill would be less, the legislature, it would be cutting the legislature more than the governor. And that's okay.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Any discussion? Representative Kalin.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering if Representative Downey wants to take the same approach that we took I'm going to actually vote no for this reason, to taking the same approach that we took to the
agency operating budgets and actually be very specific about the areas that we can pare back. Because I know that, that both caucuses have gone to more session only and really just staffed up very, very minimally. And I think that there's some ways that we could be very specific, but I don't want to just throw some political rhetoric out there. I actually want to do something, and it's one of the things I really value about this committee. Is we've, I mean, today's exchange is a good example that we've been solving problems together. And so I, the more specificity, if you could put together a list, Representative Downey, of how we can do this, I would be much more likely to support it.
Okay.
Well,
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I guess the other issue I consider is that we're also cutting the other state agencies significantly less than the governor is cutting the agency. So it's not like we're really dealing with ourselves better than what we're dealing with other people. I think we're just recognizing that with the trend of the last 12 years, you can't continue to cut. It's popular to cut the core functions of government, but then things start to fall apart. And I think the legislature has an important role in oversight and other things, and if we keep going too far in this direction, we lose the ability to actually just perform the basic duties, including deal with very difficult budget amendment problems. So, I mean, we want to be more, I think, strategic with where we cut. And I think we're meeting the target that's in front of us, and there's no reason why we can't continue.
And we're very close to the number of, when you look at the cuts to the, when you look at the cuts to the carry forward funds, the numbers are actually less than a percentage point apart in terms of the cut. Anyway, we've heard the Downey motion, and the roll call's been requested. So the clerk will take the roll.
Kahn?
No.
Bigham?
No.
Downey?
Yes.
Olberg? Healing?
No.
Cass?
Yes.
Kiffmeyer?
Yes.
Coonan?
No.
Mason?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Hoppe?
No.
Sanders?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Winkler?
No.
Okay, on a vote of 5-8, the motion fails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You want to wait till you're on a roll.
Try to recover, Madam Chair.
No.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A12 amendment.
How much is this again?
Is this all right?
Oh.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So this amendment is actually, I hope, fairly straightforward. The intent here is to ask each agency as they prepare their budget recommendations for next year to not simply identify the federal accounts that are supporting their agency budgets, but to also present to the legislature some sense of what they would do if those federal funds were somehow compromised. And my sense is that with the levels of federal debt, that we are probably one bad Treasury bill offering away from potentially serious problems at the federal level to meet their obligations. So this would be the start, hopefully, of a financial planning discipline that I think most organizations already go through, and that is to say, if you lost your largest customer, if you lost your largest supplier, what would you do? A contingency planning exercise, at least at the financial statement level here. So the hope is that for the next budget cycle, agencies would give us some sense of what the federal appropriation dependency is and what we would do if we lost a large portion of that federal payment to the state.
I guess, my first inclination was that this was a good idea, but the second one is that I think it's a large amount of work that wouldn't be very, the federal government's not going to go broke. You know, they, the thing that they get to do that we don't get to do is that they print the money. And so they continue. I don't think we've seen any decrease in these kinds of things. So it's kind of like the zero-based budgeting. I kind of think that it's a bit of a lot of work on things that don't, that aren't likely to happen. So, you know, as I said, my first inclination was a good idea, and so I started thinking about how much work each of these things would take and how unlikely it is that the federal government is going to run out of money. So,
Madam Chair, the federal government has already run out of money.
But as I said, they have a remedy to running out of money, which we don't have. So, Representative Pepper.
The only thought I guess I had on this was that it just seemed like when we got federal stimulus money, it kind of had the effect of creating expectations in the eyes of the public, and you know, for things like special ed funding and health and human services funding. So it just seems like it would be helpful to have that information out there as to what's going to happen, because I certainly get the sense from when we went through this stimulus money that the vast majority of the public didn't really have a sense of what was going to happen when we kind of built this cliff of additional dollars and what would happen after. So I'm just concerned that we don't put ourselves in a situation where we're creating expectations that aren't possible to live up to, and I think this would help address that issue. And you know, perhaps there's a way to pare it down so it's, you know, maybe less of an analysis or something, but I do think there's value in doing something of this nature.
Well, you know, I guess we can only deal with the language that's in front of us. I'm glad you mentioned the special ed fund, because that's one of the places where the federal government has really given us a mandate that they've never followed through. So if the federal government actually, and I don't know that any state schools, I don't know that anyone ever depended, the state certainly never depended on getting that money. I mean,
they
keep
got a shot in the arm when the stimulus passed.
Yeah, I know, but we should have, you know, it should have been a recognition that it's, they fostered this problem. They made this problem, you know, again, it's a valuable thing to do, but they said that this had to be fully funded and left it as a mandate, unfunded mandate to the states. So I guess I have problems voting for this. Representative Kelly?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Pepin, you know, I look at this is my job, you know, to tell my constituents about, you know, this is what that stimulus money did for us. This is how it's helping to supplant in some ways where we're going to have to make those cuts. And then this is the next round that if that funding is not there, this is where we're going to make those cuts. And I think instead of growing government right now by adding these things on there, and with all due respect, Representative Kiffmeyer, too, that, I mean, you want to talk about growing bureaucracy is, I mean, taking a look at lists of ranking different projects, making sure that we have these plans in place. We are asking for more efficiency within those departments as it is, that implementing something like this at this time I think is just an unreal expectation with the finances that we've got. And I want it to be my job to let my constituents back home know this is the budget that we're facing, this is the deficit that we're facing, and this is what it is that we need to do in order to provide a balanced budget.
Is he speaking? Which one?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kath. How do you let your constituents know? And the reason I ask is because your district might be different than some districts, because, I mean, there are only so many ways we can get this message out. We can get out through email updates. We can get them out through the radio if you're in a rural area, perhaps. You can get it out in a news release if you have a newspaper or a newspaper that's willing to publish this stuff. So I understand what you're saying, and you make good points. But I've found that a lot of times, at least metro area legislators, you know, it's not like Representative Kahn can just, you know, write to the Star Tribune and they're going to print her explanation of what happened with the federal stimulus money. So I understand what you're saying about the more bureaucracy, but in theory, it's good that we get that information out, but in reality, it's pretty difficult to reach all the people we represent, and that's just the comment I was going to make.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Just, I think as a statement, though, too, is if you have this plan, how is this plan going to get out? You know, and I wholeheartedly, you know, looking at serving on the K-12 committee and all of the reports that we make the Department of Education do and everything there, and
who is reading those? You know, and that again is my job as a state representative to make sure that I'm doing that work. And I do have the you know, fortunate nature of having a daily paper that will accept, you know, articles quite often, and you know, radio that will accept that, but daily. But I understand where you're coming from too. That this planning needs to be out there. The conversation needs to be held. But I think we can do it in a more cost-effective way.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I look at this on the face of the amendment. This is not about getting the word out or marketing or doing anything like that. This is contingency planning, and it's not even about the federal government going bankrupt or how they get their money or whatever. It simply says if there are dramatically reduced federal payments, and this is real. This is real. I do not think that the ongoing stimulus and going through like that are going to keep coming. And so we do have a responsibility in state government finance to think ahead and not just let these things just happen to us. And so it just basically says if there are dramatically reduced federal payments. I think we underestimate the ability of the strategic thinking that goes along in the whole budgeting process and all of the work that they do, that incorporating this into that already being done work is a very realistic thing, and I think it would be very constructive to think about it now instead of after the fact saying, oh, gee, what happened? What will we do now? It's just contingency kind of planning to build into the process.
Okay.
If I could just have maybe the last word before we vote on the amendment. So the intention here is not to build any kind of massive bureaucratic system or function. I mean, this is just the fundamental blocking and tackling of managing a fairly large entity, and I mean, the cost differential between contingency planning and disaster recovery is you know, orders of magnitude. It's intended to be a good government bill. I don't have the degree of confidence that others here may have that the federal government can just keep printing money without any kind of economic consequence or fiscal consequence to our state. So I'll let it stand at that.
Okay. All right. I would like to move on. Can we vote on the call for the vote on the H-12 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Amendment fails.
Madam Chair?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I would like to move the A-17 amendment. Well, we have a full house.
Madam Chair, I call for a roll call.
Yes.
You withdraw this roll call.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, this amendment has the very fortunate distinction of having been co-authored by every single member of this committee except you, including the two ex officio members, Representatives Solberg and Carlson. So I would offer the amendment, and I have to say that even members of the Senate seem to be interested. And the other day, seriously, Senator Betzel, favorably of this. And the other day I was walking in the cafeteria in the state capitol building, and someone kind of ran up behind me and said, Ryan, we finally found something we can agree on. And I turned around, and it was Commissioner Hansen. He said, I love the con bill. Some members, I think, not only in this committee support it, but I expect that the Senate will include it in the end in the conference report, and the governor will sign into law, so I would ask us all to vote for it.
Well, I would have one objection to it, which is the fact that what you're renaming is the thing that they went to great difficulties to name, the SWIFT system. And it probably would have been better if you'd found something that wasn't named yet, instead of something that had a name and this nice little
symbol. Madam Chair, if you want
symbol.
The state office building, I'm afraid you're going to have to put something that happens.
Any other discussion of this amendment?
Aye.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Amendment fails.
Roll call, Madam Chair.
Question being requested. All those in favor, raise their hand. I guess my hearing wasn't very good. Okay. All right. Let the record show that vote cast that Con voted against it.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Imagine the shock that will be heard throughout the state when they find out that Representative Con tried to get something named after herself after all those years.
Actually, that's why I made sure it was there. But the other point that I had pointed out when I was originally told about this possible proposal and that, you know, it was in conflict with that part of the statute, is that this is not a name, this is an acronym. So it is. You really didn't need the notwithstanding, but I decided I didn't want to quite work on it and correct it.
It's your story, Mr. Concord.
Okay, where are we going? A16. Oh. Representative Kalin?
I'll move the A16 amendment. Chair and members, the A16 amendment is a simple one. It builds on the existing authority that we have in statute to rent out the governor's residence for the governor's mansion for non-state uses and to get revenue there. And what it really requires is for the commissioner to assess the costs and benefits of keeping the governor's residence open. And if it's more cost-effective to essentially mothball it but keep it up, to do so, and then to, and if not doing so, then encouraging the commissioner to make it available for non-state uses as we already do. And that, Madam Chair, is the A16 amendment, and I ask for your support.
Discussion, the A16 amendment. But there is a... Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
We originally wanted to do this booking money for it, but that we moved away from that. It's too problematical.
Which probably is a good indication of that. At any rate, I think I'm just asking a question here. Isn't there, is not the residents also have a board of governors, and do they not raise private funds in some part for this? I'm just not really...
Madam
Chair, I think while Mr. Shepherd is confirming what I think is his hunch, may say that your question is right, Representative Kiffmeyer, that's a good catch. When we did look at some expenses, sort of line item, zero-based budgeting on the governor's office last year, I did notice that there's several hundred thousand dollars expended. I can't remember what the exact figure is, but expended in staff to maintain it as a residence and the ceremonial functions. I think in really tight times that, you know, this will mostly affect the next governor. And so I think in really tight times, in fact, this doesn't have an effective date, so it wouldn't take place till August 1st. We have to look everywhere, and if it's a few hundred thousand dollars we can save or generate, I think we should go after it.
Madam Chair, the big thing here is that I think we're lacking some information as to some of these calculations and some of these things, because there's a little bit of a mixture here, and not quite sure the source of all of them. I do know that the building is already used quite substantially for some things. So, and I agree with you, it has nothing to do with the current situation, and it would be a future thing. And we all do look for those kinds of savings. But I'm just not certain as to the calculation here, the costs of using and the benefits and what's a benefit. I mean, it's a hard thing to put a dollar value on.
Madam Chair, doesn't the commissioner report to the governor? Wouldn't it be highly unlikely that a commissioner would ever find that the governor's residence is not cost effective?
Well, depends. intended, what kind of relationship the commissioner had with us?
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, actually, you know, as Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, I think the most important change there would be the change on line 1.5, because changing the must into may, that then the rest of it provides specific direction on finding those cost savings. But right now, I believe that it is more difficult for the commissioner to make that determination. And so I want to remove the shackles so we can save some money.
These shackles are called employment.
I think, Madam Chair, the other comment I'd like to make is that many times some of these things are considered. I know that we as legislators, I don't qualify for that, are able to have a residence during session. And we're able to have that apartment and to do those things. And so many times these pieces of legislation are looked upon in the perspective of somebody living close enough to actually function in the required proximity to all the things that you need to do as a governor. And so, you know, we have a governor candidate right now that could be from Marshall, Minnesota. So, I mean, there's some things that you have in the legislature that already allows you to have a housing allowance for you in the legislature, and yet by virtue of doing this, if you have a governor that lives in Marshall, I mean, I think it seems a little bit, you, the legislature, have this ability, and yet somebody who might be from a outstate area being governor would be at a very, very distinct disadvantage compared to a metro governor candidate.
Well, and Madam Chair, we can rent cost benefit. I think that the cost is in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to maintain the ceremonial function. I was shocked at that. I think Minnesotans are shocked at knowing that. And what we want to do is provide a tool for the commissioner to be able to save money wherever he or she can. And if we have to rent a nice apartment or a house at a lower rate, this is not prescriptive. It's drafted to be very permissive and to find that cost-benefit analysis. I think it's a very common-sense amendment. I understand some of the reticence, but not the resonance, but
reticence.
But I think it just makes sense. I think Minnesotans say it makes sense.
I think that it's has enough maze and so forth at various places that I think it should work. And I think if we elected a governor that really wanted it, I think it could be easily. Well, I think it probably wouldn't happen because it is assumed that that it might be that the governor would use it for living quarters too. You look at the subdivision 6. So there is an assumption that the decision could be made to use it for living quarters, obviously. Okay. All those in favor of the A16 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. Okay. Next one.
Madam Chair, I move the A19 amendment. Folks have time for a chance to look. And Madam Chair, this does not have a fiscal note. It does not spend any additional money. This simply directs the Legislative Coordinating Commission to issue an RFP for a contract for the legislature to acquire business intelligence and information analytics software in order to improve legislative oversight. I was so inspired by Representative Pepin's provision for the Department of Revenue, and the fact of the matter is that we've got a lot of public data out there on accounting and budget, and there are limited tools that the legislature or anybody else has to query and make use of that information. It's public. And so the idea is to give us a better opportunity to get answers without being quite so dependent on the executive branch to do it.
Okay. Any discussion?
All those. Do we have a fiscal note on this, Madam Chair?
Yes. Well, it's written so that it just takes it from the legislative budget.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, by approving the budget for the legislative branch, we have sufficient funds available for the Legislative Coordinating Commission to accommodate this.
All right. Okay. All those in favor of the A19 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Information technology. A21 amendment. We wrote.
Check his hands.
Is that Joyce?
What?
A21. So is that one?
This is Sanders. He's just on a committee. If we can maybe go to the different one, and we can go get Sanders.
Okay. All right. A18. You speak to it?
Yeah, this is, Madam Chair, this is your favorite amendment from, or your favorite bill from from Representative Cedarson, who asked me yesterday if I would carry this. And if members don't know, I think you probably do, but basically what it does is it broadens state government bidding, the state government bidding program, the 6% set aside to include all vets, not just disabled vets, and that would also include all veterans, not just veterans serving after 9/11. And Representative Cedarson assures me that all the set aside has not been used. They've only been using about, they've only used 2.3% of the current 6% set aside. He actually says this would be cheaper because they wouldn't have to figure out which veterans are before 9/11 and which veterans are after. Okay. So,
well, I have, this bill was originally actually brought to me by a constituent who wanted it for his disabled veterans, and even though he was himself an older veteran, thought that the people who needed the most help were the newer, younger veterans. And I still feel we will see. You know, for obvious reasons, we haven't been able to deal with bills. I would prefer to deal with it as a bill when we get to deal with bills, and to have testimony to have that whole testimony on the set instead of just going on what Representative Cedarson says on the set aside. I have real problems in not. I think these sets of veterans are the ones that we've given the country's given the least support to, in terms of you know, like every other war had tax increases to fund it and so forth, and this is the one that we haven't. So, you know, I would prefer to help the ones that I think are really having more problems than veterans of previous wars did. But,
Madam Chair,
you know, when we deal with the Cedarson bill, that will.
Well, Madam Chair, I think probably, especially having stood alongside the Vietnam veterans as they have were treated very shabbily when they returned from Vietnam. The Korean veterans are often considered the lost generation of veterans. And they did a lot of sacrificing and didn't have some of the extra measures you see today on the post-911 veterans. Mm-hmm. The welcome home, the support our troops, tremendous things. And so to leave them out once again from something that is coming forward now and segmenting that out divides up your veterans. And I really think our Vietnam and Korean and some of those, there's probably not as many of them anyway to be in this kind of a situation. They're getting older. But I don't think we should set them aside. And once again, you know, we see a more recent veteran having some tremendous respect and other things, and they were kind of that group that already really were challenged and weren't given those. So let's at least not do this to them again.
Well, you know, again, I think you spoke and you said that many of them are very much older people, and I think we're looking at something that's, I think, an unfair competition in terms of the people. We're looking at someone who owns a business, and I think we're looking at successful, established businesses for the most part. And I think you know, I think we really have to hear from the Department of Administration as to what's happened with what we passed last year and what's happening with that. So I would just hope that we vote against this and we deal with it when we deal with the Severson bill.
Madam Chair, so are you planning on giving the Severson bill a hearing?
I'm planning on looking at it along with the other bills that we have before the committee.
I think that if he got a hearing, he'd be happy going there out and we wouldn't have to vote on it here. He just wants to be able to bring it forward and...
What? You know,
I'm not sure.
I don't want to... As I said, you know what this session has been like, and I really haven't had a chance to look at all the bills that are before us. And I have to... You know, specifically in terms of all the things that you look at with bills, Senate companions and material and things like that. So I am going to definitely look at it.
I guess my only question would be with the bill deadline. I'm not sure if this is a policy bill. Representative Severson says there's not a fiscal note, so I don't know.
The bill is in finance now, so it's a finance bill. So the bill deadline is the 29th.
So we don't have it till the 29th. Okay.
Yeah.
So. Okay, well then let's withdraw the amendment and go that route.
Okay. Is that mine? Oh, Sandy. Okay.
You're up.
You're up.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the A21 amendment. This... I'd like to move the A21 amendment, Madam Chair. And this amendment is similar to Representative Downey's proposal last session. This amendment pushes the process of consolidation and pushes OET to move towards managed services, requires us to continue the process that we're in. I know last session some of the opposition was potential increase in costs, it could be too expensive, or the possibility of being locked into a bad contract with managed service. I see some solutions in this amendment. One is defining service level agreements in the contract and then sending out those SLAs as the RFP. And frankly, if OET comes back with the best, MASH can beat the best RFP out there, then I think OET should obviously receive that contract. This would not consolidate the business process or application software parts of that. I think that should stay with the department. And also think that part of the RFP should be that we offer contracts to all the employees that are currently employed. So with that, that is the amendment.
Has this been discussed with OET? Did you get any information from OET about what they thought about this?
Madam Chair, we spoke very, very briefly today, and I welcome if they'd like to speak to their thoughts or comments. That's perfectly fine.
Madam Chair, members for the record, my name is Michael Meilenberg, representing the Office of Enterprise Technology. Representative Sanders did call today and prepare us for the fact he was going to introduce this amendment. And at the outset, what we would like to say is that the Office of Enterprise Technology does not oppose sourcing per se. And in fact, the Office of Enterprise Technology frequently sources aspects of its operations currently. For instance, the electronic licensing system that was approved last session that is largely done by an outside vendor. Other systems that were approved last session, such as the SWIFT replacement system is done, although some with staff employee time, is also done by an outside vendor. We have a number of other areas where we use vendors. The idea is that OET looks at all of its functions and tries to determine the best spots to strategically source its areas. OET would caution against wholesale outsourcing of all technology functions. And a couple other things that we would note about the bill. Last session, Representative Downey had a rather significant amount of investments that were provided in the bill in order to make consolidation possible in the first place. And as I looked over the amendment, I didn't see those pieces as well. As we've discussed before, quite frequently with all of these consolidation activities, there usually needs to be an upfront investment in order to make them happen. There isn't savings per se that happens from consolidation. Are there instances in which you can consolidate and save? Yes, we do think that, you know, that that is possible in some instances. But such whole-scale outsourcing as this amendment looks like it's attempting to lead to would require some upfront investment money to do it. And we just caution generally against wholesale outsourcing. A number of states have dabbled in this area over the last couple of years, such as Virginia, which has been encountering a number of troubles in that area, as well as Texas in regards to its data center consolidation.
You know, the problem I have with this amendment is its extreme depth. And I know at one point it was tried for one of the first things, reasons I got involved in this whole issue was attempt to put all of educational computing together, University of Minnesota, Minsky, and K-12, and it was just a total disaster and was actually pulled back, had to be pulled back after, in fact, the computer was installed to do it. And so I'm just, you know, if this were a little smaller and it was a little kind of looking at some aspects of outsourcing, I'd be more inclined to look at that. I don't know.
Well,
I mean, I just think this is just you know, I thought I was maybe stretching a little bit by making them do a webmaster. But this is, you know, this I think just goes far beyond to do with this point in this bill. Representative Downey, does anyone want to say?
Thank you, Andrew. Actually, I have a question. So I know we commissioned the study that would look not just at the kind of wires and cement of the infrastructure for data center consolidation, but have you start the inventory process and bring back some kind of recommendation, I think by June 30th of this year? I may be wrong on the date, but it's
there was an interim one which didn't have very much in it, which I...
Correct.
Because I was interested in that.
So my question, I guess, would be just for information, the status of that, any kind of initial indicators, and I don't want you to get beyond where you can actually speak, but I'm just curious, give the committee just a one-minute report on where that's at.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, Representative Downey, we have been very dedicated to this effort, and it has been a massive undertaking, and you will receive a quality product out of this. We have been working with Excipio and have been gathering volumes and volumes of information from the agencies, and we are on track and do hope to provide that to you by the deadline of the report. To be honest, I haven't even seen the data, so I couldn't say what it is, and I don't, to be honest, I don't think anybody in our agency has seen the data yet either.
If I could, Madam Chair, I think Representative Sanders talked to me a bit before offering this amendment, and I think this is largely a draft bill that I had last year, and I think the intent here isn't, we're drawing this conclusion that that this amendment actually requires the state to consolidate and outsource, and actually there are a number of decision points in here where the Office of Enterprise Technology, for example, on line 3.3 determines that it would be cost beneficial for the Office of Enterprise Technology to provide the systems and services. So I think if this is still largely the same bill, and I think it is, or largely the same as the bill I had before, this just, it advances the process so that we don't just get a report on June 30th and then sit still until the legislature convenes to make another decision a year from now.
The legislature convenes pretty soon after.
Madam Chair, I'm just thinking about the cycle of a project like this, and if the information comes back on June 30th and then they said for another 6 months, pending the legislature convening in January, and then waits another 6 months for the legislature to pass its final omnibus bills and get some real direction. Frankly, the data could be not accurate at all, depending on what agencies have done. So this would just be positioning the agency to continue with this analysis and have a framework in mind of saying, you know, should we consolidate? Is OET the best person to do it, or is there are there alternatives to look at? So it's really just to advance the process, I think, as compared to prescribing the solution.
Well, Michael, do you want to say something?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, I mean, a couple things come to mind. I mean, without the information in front of us, it would be difficult to RFP some of this stuff to begin with. There is such a broad array of IT assets across the enterprise. It would be difficult for us to even engage in that process, let alone the capacity to undertake such a extensive exercise as RFP all of the state's IT assets. I mean, OET is continuing to look at sourcing all the time, and when we get the information, we will continue to do that. And based upon the legislation that Representative Downey and others helped architect last year for this study, it's been very helpful for us to engage in this process. And as we get the information, we will continue to look at sourcing, as we have done since our inception in just in 2005.
Okay. I really would hope that we would not pass this at this time, that we would wait until we get that report, which was the... Didn't we take that requirement for the kind of collapse your bill into the requirement for that report, essentially? Representative Downing, yeah, last year. Didn't we take that paragraph and I know it's...
Madam Chair, we took the first component of my bill, which was the study phase, yeah, and said let's ask them to commit to doing that. Yes.
So my sense is that that's far enough to go along at that point. So, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think at hearing your comments here, Mr. Meilenberg, I think my question is, being sensitive to what Representative Downey has said, is there any little part of this, or is there any, I mean, because sometimes you have a lot of language here,
mm-hmm,
is, you know, I think once you gather data, to take that next step without waiting for us, is there any version of this at all, or piece of it that would help further to make sure we use that data?
As someone, the first bill, I had this checked out on it. The first bill I put in for organization and orientation of the information systems in the state was 1977, and they thought it was 76. So, you know, it's a long time thing to, and we've gone back and forth, and that's what got us OET, and we got us a CIO who's a cabinet member, you know, that many years after 1977. But I just think I would much prefer to see what the report says and to have the legislature get involved in what we want, what we think ought to be happening, than to have them go ahead without, you know, without legislative input. Anyway, I know...
I would like to hear Mr. Meilenberg, yeah, possible answer here, if any.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I mean, we would be glad to go look at this further to see if there's something in here that would help facilitate post-report release in terms of action, but I guess I'm not aware of anything as I peruse through this right now.
Okay.
Madam Chair, just finally, I mean, for me the big piece is really kind of analyzing the desirability and seeing, you know, sending out these RFPs and see what comes back. If it's worth us doing or not.
I think what you've heard said is that there's a lot of data that's coming to us on the 30th, and you can do much better doing after you've seen that and after the legislature has had some input into it. But I just think, as I said, there are lots of things I kind of agree in this that I've been working on before, but I just think this is too much to fast.
If I could just to answer your question, Madam Chair, just to answer Representative Sanders' question, too. Representative Downey had the foresight to include some language in there regarding actual market analysis. So, you know, part of the process that we're engaged in now is actually soliciting information from the major vendors in terms of not only how they would provide these services, but the cost to provide these services. So that is going to be part of the information you delivered.
Okay. Sanders' amendment is before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment fails. We have one more amendment, which I think is of the order of a technical amendment. This is going back to the section which Representative Kiffmeyer first pointed out. It's the section on the Secretary of State's, on the Secretary of State's office, and I believe we've passed this by. What this does is essentially rewrite, we took out section two. But this, what page is that? Eight. Bottom of eight and the top of page nine. Yeah. Okay. What this does is this essentially puts the same language we've already talked about a lot, but puts it in session law instead of in the statute so that we're sure that we look at it again. Okay. So I'll move this amendment. Whatever it is, the handwritten amendment, last one. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. There are no other amendments before us. I'll now renew my motion that House File 3449 be recommended to pass on to the Finance Department.
As amended.
For Finance Committee. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, thank you very much, members. Adjourned.